Warning, this podcast was produced by two men who still think that swearing is both big and clever. As a result, it contains quite a lot of it. Therefore, this podcast is not suitable for children, unless they're really fucking cool children.
Yes, people, it's Dave Fensom here with another episode of Pop Collaborate. And listen, as always, I am joined by my good friend, Mr. Chris the Grip.
Hey, everyone.
Yeah, and this week we have got a very, very special guest all the way over from the True Cult Pop podcast. It's Mr. Gaz Jones. How the fuck are you, Gaz?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, pleasure, Gaz. Mate.
Yes, yes.
This is, something to tick off the bucket list. Mate, cheers, guys, for having me down.
Thank you so much for coming down. Really, really appreciate this. Yeah, we've been talking about this for so long, and it's finally come together. We've got it to actually happen.
And I'll just say, lower your expectations, my friend. That's how it goes. Yeah, if you don't know Gaz, he and his podcast True Cult Pop, very much recommend you go and check it out. It's a pop music podcast. That's what it is. They review a lot of new albums, do a lot of different stuff. It comes from a point of view of if you like what we do, you probably like what they do. Indeed. So go and check them out.
Dave, you've been a guest a couple. You've been on True Cult Pop.
Yeah, I don't like to talk about it, though, mate.
You were also on the Track One Side One podcast.
I was also on the track.
You were my previous employer.
Yeah. Previous employer, yourself.
Myself.
We're all podcasters, mate.
We're all white men in our mid-40s.
You've got bald heads.
That's what's going on. So here we are. We have brought Gaz in today as an expert of mid-90s rock records, because we are today talking about a record from one of the biggest bands in the world. Mm. It's Voodoo Lounge by the Rolling Stones. Yeah. So where are we, everyone? Where are we with the Rolling Stones? Where were we with the Rolling Stones in the 90s?
I was a huge, huge fan.
Okay.
I was probably a bigger Rolling Stones fan in 1994 than any other time in my life, really. Okay. They were kind of one of those bands that... My parents fucking hated each other, basically. But the only thing they agreed on was, like, the music in the car.
Okay.
Basically,
okay.
The long car journeys that we were all on, you know. It would be Queen, AC/DC, Def Leppard, Rolling Stones. Classic rock, basically.
Okay, awesome.
So, growing up, I knew all the kind of OG singles, you know, Jumper Jack Flash and Sugar.
You're around about our age, aren't you? So, what, are you about 18 the time this comes out?
In 94, I was 16.
16. Okay, yeah. That's prime. Mm-hmm. What about yourself, Krista? You're a Stones fan?
Again, it was in the house because my mom was a fan, so I would have known the greatest hits. I would have known those ones. I don't think I ever heard an album at that point. I wasn't particularly interested in 94 at all. I don't really remember this album coming out, actually. There was obviously a bit of hype around it, but I wasn't going, new Stones album. In fact, I was more likely going, fucking Rolling Stones album, because I was a dick. It was 1994, and if something was my parents' generation... Mm-hmm. And it wasn't something that I was really into. Like I loved Hendrix, but I wasn't particularly into Stone. So I was like, yeah, fucking old people's music.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in a similar place, man. I mean, my dad liked the Stones, so I knew a bit of the Stones growing up. But, you know, I do remember this coming out because I was watching a lot of MTV at the time. Lead single pretty ubiquitous on MTV in Europe.
Yeah, right.
They had a lot of money behind that video. So that was kind of in the rotation. But it was notably in the rotation amongst loads and loads of grunge stuff and stuff that I was interested in. And this was a video that was on a lot. And when it came on, I was like... this one again, you know.
This isn't Alice in Chains. This isn't, you know, Smashing Pumpkins or something.
Exactly. So I wasn't really interested in them at the time per se. So I never heard this record, for example.
But so, Gaz, did you have this album at the time?
I did. I bought it the week it came out.
You did. Okay, so
that's why you're here, Gaz.
And you were listening to it loads and loads and loads at the time.
Yeah.
Right.
Big time. I was really, really looking forward to this. I bought Steel Wheels around the time that it came out, which is 89, which is the previous album. Yeah. So I would have been, what was I, 11? Quite why an 11-year-old was listening to.
That's a weird one for an 11-year-old.
Yeah, no, big time. It was it's just the way my music taste always was. You know, I was listening to that amongst listening to you know, Bon Jovi and Kylie.
Yeah, it was one of the first singles. It was in the charts.
A delicious melting pot of stuff that was one of the first singles I bought
was, of course, the superior version of Dancing in the Street, recorded by Mick Jagger and David Bowie.
Wow.
Definitive.
Yeah. Definitive, we'd say, yeah.
Have you ever seen... You must
Martha
have,
who?
Yeah, fuck them.
Oh, my God.
I'm assuming you've seen the video with the...
All the audio.
So wonderful.
That's a glorious, creepingly
incredible.
Right. So here's just a little bit of background for people who aren't familiar with this album at all. It's the band's, and I've called it their 20th studio album because there are so many that there was a different version in the States to the UK. Sure, yeah. There's like a few where this is basically the same but with an added one. It's about their 20th studio album. The first one was 1964, their debut, and this is therefore 30 years after their debut album.
Yeah.
So they've been going a fucking long time. Mm-hmm. They are, you know, still, they are one of the biggest bands in the world. Yeah. They you know, they were one of the biggest bands in the world in 1968. They're still one of the biggest bands in the world because of the longevity. They kept putting music out and they kept touring and touring and touring and touring.
Yeah.
It's the first new release since they joined Virgin. It was 5 years after the last one, like you said, it was Steel Wheels in 89. And that tour, the Steel Wheels tour, was the Stones' biggest production to date. It featured people like Living Colour, Dan Reed Network, Guns N' Roses, Gunn as support acts across various dates. And it became the most financially successful rock tour in history up to that point. It was absolutely huge. And it was then beaten by the Voodoo Lounge Tour.
Yeah.
You know, they beat their own record, which became the highest grossing tour of all time at $320 million.
Yeah. I mean, this is the band that got Metallica to support them.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. They were absolutely behemoths. And because... It's 30 years on from their debut, so it's not like they're fresh young things or anything like that, but their fan base has stayed loyal. People are buying records. Obviously, this got to number one. People are going to see them. It's a huge tour.
They're finding new fans, like fresh-faced young Gaz over here.
Yes. Hello.
But at the time of this release, both Mick Jagger and Keith Richards were 51.
Yeah.
Right? So let's bear that in mind as we go through this album as well.
Very much so, yeah. And they both just come off the back of, you know, kind of mixed success solo records as well.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, very true.
Yeah. And it's the first one there without Bill Wyman.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they've had to replace Bill Wyman as a bassist. He was unofficially replaced by someone called Daryl Jones, who still performs, I think, with them.
Yeah.
But I don't think he's is he official?
No, he was never made an official member.
Yeah, that's got a rankle, hasn't it?
I don't know. I'm sure he's on a decent, steady wage.
I imagine his money's okay.
It's fine. You don't ask those sort of questions.
If he's at a party, people go, what do you do? Oh, I play in a band. What band is it? Rolling Stones. He's like, oh, you're in the Rolling Stones? No.
No.
No, I play with them.
I'm an employee.
Yeah.
Yeah, paging Sergio Vega. I mean, at this point, Bill Wyman's been gone, what, about 3 years?
Yeah, I think he officially retired in 19... I think the last thing he played on was the single they released called Highwire.
Okay.
In 1990, which was like an extra track on the Flashpoint Live album, which was recorded on Steel Wheels tour. And it was a track that was banned by Radio 1 because it came out during the Gulf War.
Oh, like flat, right. So in the same way, Massive Attack had to change their name.
Yeah, so Bill Wyman had to leave because his girlfriend had started high school in India.
There was that, and he had to do the school run, right? Yeah. I was going to say, when are we going to bring up the fact that he marries a fucking, what was she, 14?
Something like
Mandy
that.
Yeah,
the Hub Smith.
Mandy the Wild Child.
Yeah. No one fucking batted an eyelid. I remember seeing I remember the pictures being in the papers and all this kind of shit. You know, Bill Wyman and Mandy, whatever her name is.
Jailbait.
Jailbait, thank you. And no one batted a fucking eyelid.
They were massive fans
of Jerry Lee Lewis, weren't they? So.
And Elvis and Bowie.
Yeah.
Indeed. Mm. Also, this was produced by Don... Is it Waz?
Waz. Yeah.
Don Waz.
I would say Don Waz.
But that doesn't. But the.
So do you say Waz not Waz then? No, I've been saying it wrong the whole fucking time.
Waz not Waz. That's the point.
Yeah, I think
is
that's
it?
Because
it's pronounced Waz not Waz.
So there you go.
Anyway, there goes my phone.
That really blew your fucking mind.
It literally blew my mind and broke my phone.
That's right, though. That's how I've always said it. I mean, I've never spoken.
Well, I mean, it kind of makes sense. I've always just been like, you know, Waz not Waz, Walk the Dinosaur, Waz not Waz, your head. You know?
Whenever I was, you know, back at the time and they were putting records out, I was like, it's Waz not Waz. But then I read somewhere or whatever, it's Waz not Waz. I was like, oh, okay, fine.
Now, that is a genius fucking band name.
Oh, yeah,
I was sort of a bit shit.
Yeah.
Thanks, Dave.
There you go.
I'm done.
But yeah, so he produced this, and he has produced every single album since as well. Mm. This was the first one he did.
Yeah.
Bulk of the album was written in a three-month period in Barbados at Eddie Grant's place, apparently.
Hard life.
I know, imagine. Oh, you have to do that. But then it was recorded in Ireland, and Jagger said at the time that they tried to make a more human record and get away from the slick sound of the 80s. At the moment, it's more fashionable to be like that, to be human. So I think they were looking around and going, oh, right, you know, grunge is happening and stuff. So it's people getting in touch with their emotions, and it's not this polished thing that we were doing in the 80s. So I think there is an element where they're trying to not necessarily stay relevant, but they're trying to take on an element, at least, of what was happening around them.
But it was also something quite telling in those, because I read some of this stuff as well. And they, you know, they were going, we brought in all these different rhythmical elements, and Don Was very, he was like, no, that's not what people want.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you sound like a fairly sensible man, Don Was.
Because
we've seen many, many records when people have brought in some new influences. Yeah, Page and Fleetwood Mac,
Fleetwood
for example.
Mac, absolutely. Paul Simon.
And they are universally bad ideas.
Yeah.
You know.
And the producer should have gone, tell you what, let's bank that. And if we need it, we'll bring it back.
And it actually sounds like Don Was here has actually reined them in a little bit.
Yes, I suspect.
And so hopefully with some kind of good result. Anyway, so let's start, as we always do, let's have a look at the album cover.
Indeed.
So obviously we've got this kind of yellow dotted voodoo
weird
thing.
Kind of like, what do you call them, those things that are at the front of car lots, the inflatable man?
Oh, the wiggly arm man.
Wiggly arm. It's like that kind of...
Wiggly
arm man. Yes.
And look, right, I don't think it's a great image, but it's distinctive enough to stick on a load of branding for the world's biggest tour, I guess.
Oh, it really is. But then, you know, whenever you think of the Rolling Stones, do you necessarily think of brilliant album covers? Because Sticky Fingers...
Yeah, Sticky Fingers aside, not really.
The other ones, like, oh...
Well, Tattoo U's pretty and iconic.
Is that the one with the lips?
No. Tattoo U is the one with... well, it's like Mick Jagger's face with like those tattoos superimposed. It was the album's got to Start Me Up on it.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty kind of iconic. But
right. Yeah. But yeah, their logo, which is the kind of the lips logo, is very iconic.
That's much more iconic than any of their album covers.
The album covers, they do, I think, for the most part, not stand up to much scrutiny. This, I don't think, is a great album cover.
No.
I know I say this quite often whenever we're looking at covers from the early 90s. It looks like someone's experimenting with a computer program. They've gone, oh, well, I'll do this in MS Paint and then we'll make it a little bit weird.
I think it's more designy than that, personally.
Do you?
But I do, yeah. I think someone's gone for an idea, but I don't particularly... Mm. Yeah, like it looks like a couple of bananas fucking, doesn't it?
I mean, I'd buy that album.
Sure. Oh, yeah, I know you would.
Yeah.
You fucking pervert.
Hey.
Fine. Anything to add there, Gaz?
Well, apparently the title comes from the name that Keith Richards gave to Ronnie Wood's granny flat.
Oh, really?
That's not a euphemism.
And he painted the cover too. Apparently that is a Keith Richards original.
Oh, is it? I don't know that one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, what a multi-talented man he is.
At the time, I remember thinking, oh, it's great. I mean, you know, put yourself back in like 1994 when you're in HMV or Virgin or R-Price or Andy's or whatever.
Mm.
That cover fucking stood out because it was kind of lurid and yellow and red and stuff. It did just kind of stand out in the kind of like new...
Right, okay.
You know, new arrivals kind of CD rack. But now it just looks like a bad rave flyer if it was like illustrated by Jim will paint it. It's
like
so like you were saying about, hey, I've got this new awesome bit of software for my PC. Look what I've just done.
Yeah.
And it does look like that. But yeah, apparently, and I only found this out today. Yeah, it was actually illustrated by
Keith
original. Himself.
Oh, fucking hell. The only other thing I've got to add is that it won the inaugural Grammy Award for Best Rock Album in 1995.
Yeah, a prize that's never in any way been bought and paid for.
No.
Who else was in the who were the nominees? You know,
good question. I will look it up.
Jewel and Metallica.
Yeah, Jethro Tull. I would have thought Ian Anderson will be there. Goes, boo! We should have won it.
It has sold over 6 million copies worldwide to date. Of the album, it's only gold in the UK with sales of 100,000. So it's, you know, it's not their biggest selling.
So it came out of the block strong in the UK.
Yeah, exactly. It's a fan base 1 week at number one.
Four top 40 singles, eh?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Not a single one in the States.
No.
Says a lot about the changing musical climate in America. Exactly. Even the Stones were struggling in America.
Exactly. And they pumped a lot of money into that first video as well.
No shit.
The fact that that had the rotation it did and didn't score a hit is quite... Yeah. I was quite surprised, actually, to learn that it didn't do anything.
No, so. I do remember that at the time, because, I mean, Love Is Strong, I'm sure we'll go into it. Love Is Strong did go top 20 in the UK.
Yeah.
Yeah, I bought the Cass single.
Cass single.
Yeah. All right, Grandad.
Yeah, I know, mate. I know.
I remember the Blitz.
Okay, 1995... Grammy Rock Award. The other nominees: Pearl Jam Versus, REM Monster, Soundgarden Super Unknown, Neil Young Crazy Horse, Sleeps
Fair
with
enough.
Angels.
Fair enough.
Sleeps with Angels.
Yeah.
Fucking hell. Voodoo Lounge is comfortably the worst album on that list.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. All those other ones, what was it, four that you said? They're all brilliant.
Right.
I will go to bat for any of those other nominees.
Versus, Monster, Super Unknown.
Sleeps with Angels was the last great Neil Young album as well.
Oh, well. Yeah. Not as good as Voodoo Lounge, I think you'll find, guys.
Okay,
because
sorry.
You can't argue with the Grammy judges.
With the Grammys, yeah.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
Let's crack into this fucking record anyway. It's 15 tracks long. We've got a while.
Number one, which is called Love Is Strong. Right, okay. And this was the first single taken from it. Came out in July 94, and it got to number 14.
Yes, it did.
But like you say, in the USA, it only got to number 91. Yeah. And it became the Rolling Stones' worst performing lead single from an album at that point.
Well, look, I remember this from back in the time. Right?
Do you?
Everyone does, right? I've
never heard this in my life before this.
Oh, no, really?
Never. Honest to God.
Even Turbo Indy Wanker Christo would have been aware of this.
You'd have thought.
I would say that means you didn't have access to MTV at the time.
I did not, no.
So that's it. Right? Okay, this was an MTV. This is the only reason I ever heard this song is because it was on MTV a lot. Mm. And I like this, man. It's got a laid-back fucking slinky groove to it. It's got that kind of... a bit of harmonica going on. I mean, Jagger is singing like he's making a nuisance phone call.
Yeah. Yes, he is. He said that's a deliberate choice.
Oh, without a doubt. I do not need to hear him singing about him. Someone making him hard.
Mate.
Like you make me hard. Who is this song to? Viagra. You know what I mean? A fucking eyedropper.
What, 1994?
Yeah. An eyedropper full of iodine. But
I think that's not the worst lyric on here as well.
This is
a fucking problematic song, frankly. Mm. It's like he's singing about a woman that he apparently doesn't know yet. Because the lyric is like, "Someday, babe, we gotta meet." Mm-hmm. But he's saying that basically, he's saying he wants to fuck her, and he's willing to stalk her until that happens.
Yeah,
we got a glimpse of you was all it took. A stranger's glance, it got me hooked, and I'll follow you across the stars. I'll look for you in CD bars.
Yeah.
Okay. What are you scared of, baby? It's more than just a dream.
Those lips.
Anywhere, out in the park, out in the street and in the dark, I'll follow you through swirling seas, down darkened wood with silent trees. That's a bit frightening, frankly.
Well, listen to the way he's saying it.
Yeah, like a sex pest.
Yeah.
Yeah, he said he wanted to... they ran it through a bunch of times and... He got the strange sort of sound with the harmonica. He then started singing down an octave, so you get this kind of breathy, sexy tone.
Sexy.
His word, breathy, not mine.
Yeah, breathy. Yeah.
I don't want to hear a 51-year-old man singing a breathy, sexy tone at me about some woman that he quite fancies and doesn't know.
Well,
this is bizarre.
Yeah, anyway, I mean, I'm quite happy to hear it, though, because I think this is a great fucking tune.
Oh,
yeah,
right.
What do you think?
Mate, this has that kind of top tier Stones group. This is one of my absolute favourite Rolling Stones singles. You know, my favourite kind of Stones is when they kind of slow it down and get gritty.
Okay.
Not sexy.
Come on, guys.
What's wrong with being sexy?
We're in Brighton, guys.
We are.
Embrace it.
We are
hey,
bright on.
Guys, why don't we all take our tops off?
I already have. I'm sorry.
That's a weird tattoo, man.
This is why we're not allowed on YouTube.
It's really not that sort of party, is it? Sorry. I mean, you know, that kind of dirty, distorted harmonica sounds still gets me even 30 years on.
Really?
Yeah, man. There's a particular core memory, really, for this song.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Like, I mean, I was saying to you guys earlier, you know, I grew up in an RAF family, and in 1994, my dad was posted to Saudi Arabia.
Yep.
And this song just reminds me of those kind of initial times living out there, because we had, well, Asian version of MTV, which is called Channel V.
It
was exactly the same in all but name. It had the same idents and everything.
Oh, right.
And like Dave was saying, this video, every fucking 10 minutes, Right. And I couldn't help but get into it. And I mean, I loved it anyway. I loved the video. I loved the kind of black and white, the kind of starkness of it. Yeah. With, you know, like Jagger kind of striding through the cityscape like fucking some granddad Godzilla.
I like the video.
It's very hard for me to look objectively at this song or the video because there is so much kind of emotional heft with this song.
No, that makes
kind
a
of engaged with me. Like every time I hear that that intro, I'm just like, I'm 16 again on a British Airways flight out to Saudi.
Yeah.
You know, just full of fucking teenage angst and wanting to kind of dry hump the passenger next to me because I'm just so
Jagger's
fucking
telling you
I'm just horny and Mick Jagger's making me even hornier.
Wow.
Saw a camel, got the hump.
Hey, fuck it out. Wow. I don't have any context for this at all. Like I say, I'm pretty sure this is the first time I've heard this song is for this podcast.
Blimey.
And it does nothing for me at all. I think it's very strange.
I came back to this song. We're not really having any emotional connection to it other than hearing it at the time, hearing it enough that it's kind of in the psyche. And I think this has aged really well. I think
I
really like the groove on it. It's Jagger being weird and pervy, but I'm like, do you know what, man? At this point, you've kind of earned it. You're a fucking rock icon.
Exactly.
And you're doing something that is not what I expected from this. I expected this to be moribund, like fucking dad rock, and it's like, oh, this sounds like someone that's still trying to do something a little bit different, and I really like that about it. And I think this is a good time, this tune.
Okay, fair play. I'm not getting as much out of it as you boys.
Nope.
I think this is a bit of a pedestrian bluesy tune.
My favorite kind of Stones is when they dial it back and go a bit slower and groovier. Yeah. That's my favorite kind of Stones. Stuff like Bitch and stuff like that.
More sleazy.
Yeah, exactly. That's my favourite kind of Stones.
Right,
it always was, even when I was younger.
Cool. Fair enough. Right, okay.
Let's dive into track number two then. This one is called You Got Me Rockin'. Mm-hmm. And that title is pure dad rock.
Oh, mate.
Yeah. So smashy and nice, isn't it?
Isn't that the exact same drum intro as the first one as well?
It's pretty
just
much.
Charlie Watts going, dibba-dibba, and then we're in. Yeah.
Probably.
Best of luck telling Charlie Watts that.
Wow.
You know, he took no shit, God rest his soul.
Well, let's face facts, though. Like, half of the best fucking hip-hop tracks of the late 90s all start exactly the same way.
Yeah, sure.
Pharrell produced them that way. So I was a butcher cutting up meat. That's the first lyric in here.
Yes, great. Yes. Yeah.
Yep. I think this is surprisingly heavy. It's like it's bar blues, but it's...
It's bar blues, and this sounds a lot more Rolling Stones to me than the first one. Yeah. This sounds like, oh, this is classic 60s Stones to me.
Yeah. I mean, look, Mick sounds a bit like he's on his fourth or fifth midlife crisis at this point, right?
Yeah, it sounds
which
about
he
right.
Was.
Okay. Yeah.
Which he was. But again, I think it's a solid bar blues track. It rocks pretty hard. I like it way more than I expected to.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's a bit No Thrills. From the first four bars of hearing it, you know what you're getting. I'm like, this is actually a reasonable stomp through for a band 30 years into their career. This is not what I would expect them to be doing. So I quite like this one again.
Okay.
So yeah, I'm two for two at the minute.
Guys, I mean, whenever you first heard this, did this one... Because this was a single as well. This was the second single.
Yeah, this was the second single, right?
Got to number 23 in October.
It did.
Were you into this one as well?
Oh, I loved it. Absolutely.
Oh, right, yeah.
To me, this should have been the opener to the album as opposed to... I think Love Is Strong should have been track two. This is how... I, as a fan, would have... When I hear a new Rolling Stones album, or certainly back then, I'd want to hear something more kind of rollicking straight out of the gates. Mm-hmm.
I must admit, that does make sense to me. I can see this as the opener.
I can see that as well. That's a really good observation.
I mean, it's got that kind of wicked kind of Some Girls era kind of riff to it. Mm-hmm. You know, the way I kind of look at it, you know, in 1994, you know, you had Black Crowes hitting pay dirt with what was essentially an update of the Stones sound.
Sure.
Don't get me wrong. We're all in agreement here. Black Crowes is fucking incredible, right? Mm. You know, Southern Harmony and all that fucking... And Morica, amazing. And it's almost like, with this song, it kind of sounds a bit like, to me, like they obviously would have heard Black Crowes stuff like Remedy and stuff, and they would go, you're just ripping us off. We can still do it better.
But
it was their attempt of kind of writing, I guess, a classic kind of Stonesy kind of Brown Sugar rollicking kind of banger.
Mm. Yes. I mean, it sounds like those... And therefore, if it was another band, you go, that's ripping the Stones off. Mm-hmm. You're allowed to rip yourself off. That's
of course.
Fine. But in terms of Black Crowes, the keyboards on this album are provided. There's a guy called Chuck Lavelle, who was in the Allman Brothers band in the 70s. He also played on Jessica, the classic Top Gear theme. He's played with the Rolling Stones since 1983, but he was also the keyboard player on Black Crowes' Shake Your Moneymaker.
Which
makes a lot of sense in terms of the sound of it. Mm-hmm. But you're definitely right that the Stones are therefore going to be very aware of what they're doing, because he's going to be going, oh, this is what I'm up to these days as well. Chuck Lavelle's going to be saying that. I think this is fine. I prefer it to the previous one, because it's more what I like imagine a Rolling Stones song to sound like. But it doesn't really blow me away. I think it is a decent bar blues song,
and I think that's as far as I'd go with it. I think in terms of where my expectation was to what I'm got, I'm like, okay, if this album sounds like these first two songs. Mm-hmm. I'm in for a much better time than I was expecting. That's where I'm at, okay?
There's a theory that this song is kind of a riposte to a lot of the Rolling Stones critics who were saying they were too old to be playing at all, and definitely too old to still
They were saying that in 1994. The mad thing is that this was like you can essentially call this mid-period Stones now.
I know. Because the song, it's things like lines are, you know, I was a hooker losing her looks, I was a writer, can't write another book. So it's all things about professions and going through a bad patch. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, I met you and you got me rocking and now I'm back on top.
Yeah.
And so it's like they find their mojo again, sort of thing.
Bounce back.
Everything's great again. And therefore, perhaps this is another song about either cocaine or Viagra, because it's like, I was going through a bad time, but now you got me rocking.
There you go. So, yeah, I mean, Viagra doesn't exist yet. Just like to just for as Gareth pointed out, for clarity. Why is it for another 10 years? Anyway, right.
But in terms of that idea, right, critics going, the Rolling Stones should have stopped by now, you know, past their point. Because again, there was a review at the time where an LA Times said, over the years, the Stones have been guilty of turning out albums that could be more easily described as product than passion. Mm. Which, you know, is a fair point for some things, definitely, I think. Mm-hmm. But how many artists can you go 30 years into their career, they should still be going, and they shouldn't have hung up their boots, you know? I think one of the ones that people say is Bowie. But he did an awful lot of shite in the middle of his career.
Yeah, and but
people forget. Isn't it funny though? Like when Bowie died, a lot of people forget that period when he couldn't get fucking arrested.
Absolutely not.
But I think is really interesting though is that like a lot of the Bowie stuff, even the stuff that's really bad, objectively or was reviled as really bad, a lot of it goes through a critical reevaluation. Like there was a long period in the 90s and almost early 2000s where, you know, when you talked about 80s Bowie, like absolute beginner's level, Let's Dance, right?
That was
thought of, you know, like it's very dismissively in the music press.
It was.
And then
a whole
generation of kids went, this is the stuff we fucking love.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of even heard people, you know, like We Hate Americans and stuff like that, people like rediscovering some of that stuff. And, you know, the thing with the Bowie stuff is it was always singularly produced. It was always from a viewpoint, and it always had a level of interest in there. It was never artistically moribund. It's just sometimes didn't quite hit the mark with the zeitgeist.
Whenever we did Black Tie White Noise, it was like, he's trying some stuff here.
Yeah.
But
it wasn't his fucking finest moment. And, you know, 30 years in, I mean, take that as an example, that last track, okay? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a decent bar blues song, right? And I'm not saying it's a all-time classic, but it's a song played with passion by a group of men in their 50s, and you're like, that's not. I don't think that's an embarrassing song. That's, you know,
no. But the flip of that is, I'm going to be different because I'm coming to this very very fresh. Yeah. It's the first time I've heard it. I would never put this on a greatest hits. Mm. You know, I would never go, this is up there with the stuff that is, you know, on the Hot Rocks compilations, that sort of stuff, the 60s, 70s.
It's been on the greatest hits that have come out since this.
Oh, I'm sure it has. Because it was
40 Licks.
Yeah.
I think it's on that. And it was on the, was it Grr? I think it was called. Right. It had a monkey on the front cover.
Right. But it doesn't compare to me to those classics. It sounds like a pale shadow of those classics. It's not bad, but it sounds like, oh, well, yeah, it's like that, but, you know, not as good as, that sort of way.
I can understand that point of view, and you know, this particular song, I'd say, probably doesn't deserve to be on the class. I said the first track, I'd put that on a greatest hits.
Oh, I see, right?
Oh, sure. I think that's a greatest hits song. That's like an iconic single that that sounds like their sound 20 years later. You know? You are right. There is a law of diminishing returns with the stuff.
Yeah.
There is a certain bulletproof nature, though, when what you're playing is so kind of in a pocket of that blues thing, isn't it?
And don't get me wrong, I am glad that they are just doing stuff that sounds like the Stones like this, rather than trying to reinvent themselves. And, you know, whenever Def Leppard and your man got cornrows and dreadlocks and tried to be, you know, a bit tougher.
I've forgotten about that.
Exactly. I don't want that. And I also don't want whatever, you know, Madonna was doing in probably 30 years after her first stuff, where she's going, oh, no, this is really interesting. It's like, that's just not very good. I prefer that they just stay in their lane. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But that lane for me isn't particularly interesting.
Oh, are you discounting Bitch I'm Madonna?
When was that?
Yes, I am. 2013.
Yeah,
I am.
Oh, I've never heard it.
Bitch I'm Madonna's a great song. Anyway, no. Right.
Well, Metallica should have stopped recording music in the mid 90s and just done greatest hits tours.
I mean, that's basically what they have.
That's what they are doing.
Yeah, but they should have not put any more music out.
I think that is arguably the case.
Anyway.
Right, let's have a listen to track three. This is called Sparks Will Fly.
Yes, it is. Same drum intro.
Yeah, that's what he does.
Yeah, Charlie.
Yeah.
And this one wasn't a single, so we're into the first just regular album track.
We are about to be confronted with one of the most unpleasant images we've confronted so far.
Oh, well.
You'd better grease up. I'm coming back.
Daddy's coming home.
Backdoor Jagger.
Oh, dear God.
Yeah.
Mate. Yeah, I mean, I've read a couple of different accounts of what this song is about.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is Richards, who said that they had a big bonfire going out one night in Ronnie's garden in Ireland. He was throwing some logs on it, the sparks started flying, and suddenly I ran back to the studio going, I've got one. That's possible. But then he also said that it might be Keith Richards invited Jerry Lee Lewis to record, at Ronnie Wood's studio in Ireland. But Lewis took it very seriously and thought they were actually making an album. And whenever the session got played back, he started to pick apart like Richards' band and the backing, which Keith Richards got really pissed off, and they had a stand-up verbal shouting match.
Nice.
So that's apparently another, maybe it's Sparks Will Fly That Way.
Okay.
Yeah. Don't know. But for a song about a fight, this is a pretty fucking tame song.
Again, I've put here, it's an entirely serviceable, entirely forgettable blues standard.
I'm so sorry. Wait a minute. We've just talked over the line.
Oh, what's the line?
Right. Let me just skip back a second here. If we just listen to Mick Jagger, this comes out of absolutely nowhere as well. I want to fuck your sweet ass. Thanks, Mick. Thank you, Mick.
Speaking of Omen 3.
My goodness, I wasn't expecting that.
This feels a lot to me as well, musically. Like, they've heard, like, what Guns N' Roses have been doing. So Guns N' Roses out on tour with
them. Sure, yeah.
And like, if you listen to like some of the heavier bluesier stuff on Use Your Illusions 1 and 2.
Bad Obsession and stuff
like that. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. This kind of sounds a little bit like that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that, you know, I mean, I better tell the fire chief to quit playing cards. But yeah, it's fine. It's okay. I'm less excited by this than the first two songs.
Are you? Okay. Gals, what do you reckon?
Yeah, I mean, it's a slight step down from the first two. Those kind of first two tracks kind of show me now. I didn't really notice it as much at the time because I was just excited for a new Stones album in 1994. But like, Love Is Strong, You Got Me Rocking, still, they kind of show me now that even in their kind of early 50s, the Rolling Stones still gave a kind of fuck and had a little bit of quality control.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
In terms of they still knew how to kind of, you know, these gazillion air bloody rock stars actually still knew how to write like a decent kind of, still knew what the Rolling Stones sounded like.
Yeah.
Still knew, you know, how to kind of get that onto disc. I mean, this is decent. I think it's got a bit kind of a rollicking kind of late 70s kind of feel to it.
Right.
It's, you know, it reminds me a little bit of the kind of Steel Wheels kind of stuff as well, like mixed emotions and stuff like that.
I see. An extension of that.
Yeah. I always kind of like the chorus to it. And, yeah, you know, fuck your sweet ass.
Yeah, I want to fuck your sweet ass.
You made, sassy old man.
You made direct eye contact with me as you said that, Gaz. And I've never felt more uncomfortable or aware of how big you
totally
are.
Totally intentional. We're all bears here, Dave.
Oh, man. Now, I don't like this. I think this sounds like 50-year-olds trying to sound relevant. I think this is a stretch. Fair. I also don't think there's much of a tune. I think it's very kind of just... it goes from A to B and there's not much in the middle. Again, Keith Richards said at the time in an interview, Sparks Will Fly was actually written eyeball to eyeball with Charlie Watts more than anyone to start with because we would not let anyone else play on it until we'd honed down that rhythm track dead right. And I'm going, that rhythm track? That's the most basic drumming backbeat. And occasionally he sounds like he's fucking missing the beat.
It's hard being that in the pocket though, mate.
I don't think he is.
I think he is.
I generally think he's in the pocket. He's also got that kind of
loose, languid Stones groove. What is it? Tight yet loose? Is that the phrase?
I don't hear that. I hear he's like wooden for a drummer. It's like dun 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 dun, and it doesn't feel like there's any groove to it.
But no one can play like Charlie Watts. Just like with AC/DC, no one can play like Phil Rudd. Everyone's like, oh, it's fucking easy. We do. You're doing that. Try and play like Phil Rudd. No one could play like Phil Rudd.
Except for Phil Rudd. I just it's such a strange thing where Keith Richards is really proud of this rhythm track he's laid down. I'm going, that sounds the most basic you could do. But like you said, I've never tried to play it. So, okay, I will let it go.
Get the kit out.
Get the drums.
Oh, man.
Right, okay, let's do track four. This one's called The Worst.
Spoiler, it's not.
It's a brave move to call that... song The Worst, just in terms of you're handing critics an open goal.
Gag on a plate.
Yeah.
So I feel like we've gone from Guns N' Roses to Bob Dylan here.
Oh, okay. I mean, yeah. But first one we got here with Keith Richards on vocals.
Yeah, it's a kind of a slow plodding country blues song, isn't it?
Yeah. Bit of steel guitar in there.
Yeah.
We've gone kind of full country, really. Mm. Opening lines are, well, I said from the first, I'm the worst kind of guy for you to be around. And the whole thing is Keith Richards admitting that he's basically a walking red flag. Mm-hmm. And he should be avoided at all costs because he's the worst.
A red bandana.
Yeah. I thought all that's public knowledge, though, isn't it? Especially by this point.
Yeah, exactly. By 94, if you don't
would
know...
Would you let your daughter go out with Keith Richards?
Good God.
No, I wouldn't be able to because she'd already be going out with Bill Wyman.
That's fair.
Yeah, no, I don't particularly think that I would enjoy a night out with Keith Richards at the pub.
I don't know. I think I'd have a go. That would probably be it for your life.
If you got the offer, you'd have to take it.
Oh, you have right. to.
And if you survived...
Right. Yeah.
You'd never be the same again. But he might bring out a steel guitar, and that's the worry.
Oh, about half five in the morning, sat in the kitchen. You know when the sesh inevitably ends up in the kitchen? Where's Keith gone? All of a sudden he reappears with the lap steel.
A bottle of just fucking like insanely expensive red wine that he's drinking out of the bottle.
Yeah. And he goes, "Do you want some of that?" I said, "No, because it's kind of covered in spit."
Yeah.
And
old man spit.
And
as well.
all your spit is brown because all you smoke is unfiltered roll ups.
Yeah. Okay. I think this is Keith Richards essentially because he's saying. His quote, in any new relationship, I tell people, do you know what you're dealing with? Don't tell me that I didn't say from the first that I'm the worst. I say it out front. Take it on or get out. And I get what he's doing there. Yeah, you get in front of it. But that is him trying to give himself carte blanche just to be an absolute wanker.
Russell Brand. Anyway.
It's a get out of jail card for him going, well, I told you I was a cunt. Why are you accusing me of being a cunt? I told you I was a cunt. It's like, you did, but you're still being a cunt. Well, I think this is pretty dull. I
think this is a bit by numbers. It doesn't really do much for me. Gaz, give us a counterpoint on this.
Go on.
Well, I mean, I didn't really like it at the time. I thought this was a bit kind of fucking boring because what 16-year-old is going to want to listen to something that sounds like Graham Parsons, basically. But now, because I'm in my mid-40s and I do like a bit of like lap steel kind of country inflected kind of rock.
Mm-hmm.
I like it, man. I think it's one of the better kind of mid-period like Richards.
What do you think of his voice?
I've always really liked Keith Richards.
Have you?
Voice.
I don't think it's a good voice.
It just sounds like old leather.
Oh, it sounds like experience and
there's miles on that clock.
Yeah, absolutely.
My criticism isn't his voice. It doesn't like excite me here, but you know, he sings on another song on this record as well. Yeah. You know, so I know that it's not the criticism. That's not what my criticism is. Okay. Sorry, guys, I cut you off.
I mean, it's nowhere near as good as, say, like Slipping Away, which was like the last track on Steel Wheels, which he sung. But I still really like it. I didn't really like it at the time. This would always be one I'd used to like kind of fast forward on the Walkman. Right. Because it was just a bit... Yeah.
But it hits a bit different now.
Yeah, big time. Big time.
Well, no, of course it does. It's 30
obviously
years later.
Because, you know, I am a cunt. Obviously, successful divorcee.
You are the worst.
Did you say
card carrying member?
Did you just say hits different? What are you, Gen Z?
Yeah, man.
Yeah, man. Yeah, that hits different, fam. Yeah. I thought it was a bit mid.
I thought it was a bit extra.
I don't know if mid is good or bad.
It's mid.
Is it literally? Well, that's what it is.
It's a bit mid. It's a bit
it
average.
Actually means middle then.
Yeah, oh, I see. Yeah. Oh, well.
Fucking hell. Jeez. Who would have thought?
A bit mid, man.
Fine.
Right, okay.
All
right,
let's do stock.
Yeah. One more track on this on this section then. This one's called New Faces, presumably about the talent contest.
Yeah, yeah. Where Lenny Henry was discovered, wasn't it? Yeah, wasn't
I
believe New Faces,
so, yeah.
I
thought it was.
Showing the age now. Fucking hell. I'll be fit. Right, sorry.
I assumed it was just about plastic surgery. Like nice. They order all their girlfriends to get it. Guess what I've got you
a
for your birthday?
New Faces.
We appear that we're at the Renaissance Fair now. We all know it's not a party until someone breaks out the lute.
Yeah, yeah. Who brought the fucking harpsichords?
Yeah, man.
Get him out of here.
I wondered if they were just like in a studio and they saw one and went, I'm sure we had a hit in the 60s with our harpsichord on it. Just get that out again. Let's do this one more time.
Did Paul McCartney write a hit on a harpsichord? We need to do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, have you got any frogs that can sing?
They did admit, apparently, that there's a song called Lady Jane from 1966, which is harpsichord-led and sounds a bit like this. Yeah. And they admit in post-release interviews that they went, oh, yeah, no, we now realise it does sound a bit like that. So, again, they're kind of
ripping themselves.
Yeah, precisely. They're doing something that worked for them back in the day, which is...
The amount of times I go to repeat stories on this podcast, I can't really blame them.
Oh, no.
But, yeah, this one does not do... much for me at all, man. I feel this is like a bit of a turgid plodder, kind of a bit of a waste of everyone's time, really.
Yeah, this is the first shit track on the album.
This
screams filler.
Yeah. Right, okay.
And the harpsichord. So I've never been a harpsichord. Do you like the harpsichord, guys?
I think it can't be...
I think it's fucking a horrible instrument.
Oh, I think it can be good.
Horrible. Never liked
it. I'm trying to think of. I'm sure there is something with a harpsichord in it that I like, but I can't remember what it is. Maybe, yeah, maybe that.
Handle.
No. You can't handle the truth.
Fuck no. Is that what you call it?
What I find very strange about this song, because I don't mind the sound of it, I think it's whatever. But this is a song about a younger and more attractive man who shows up on the scene and is turning the heads of the woman who might once have been like wanting to go out with Mick Jagger.
Yeah.
Right? And so he's like, oh, well, I'm jealous that there's this young kid in town and I'm not the cock of the walk anymore. Right, here's some facts. Jagger was born in 1943 and he has been involved with an absolute litany of younger and younger women over the years, including quite often him having affairs with him while he was married to somebody else. In 2016, when Mick Jagger was 73, he was in a relationship with a woman called Melanie Hamrick, who gave birth to a son of theirs when she was 29. So for Jagger to be writing a song going, oh, it's so annoying that there's this fucking young lad and I can't believe he's taking the attention away from me. This isn't fair. That's some balls on him to say that in a song, isn't it?
What do you think attracted her to the multimillionaire, Keith?
Yeah, exactly.
Mick Jagger.
Yeah.
You just went full Mrs. Merton there for a second.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, let me tell you what this name of that son that was to Mick Jagger and Melanie Hamrick. Mm. He is called Devereux Octavian Basil Jagger. I mean...
It was going fine until you said Basil.
That's the
Where
one.
The fuck did Basil come from?
Devereux,
we need a third
Octavian,
name. What's your favourite herb,
Jagger.
Mick?
Yeah.
Devereux.
Mate.
That's like a baddie name from like an 80s like noir fucking future sci-fi film.
Absolutely, yeah.
Devereux.
Yeah. Now, Keith Richards, at least he has been married to the same woman since 1983. He was 40 and she was 27. Fair enough.
That's all right.
Yeah. But yeah, Jagger was 73. Hamrick was 29.
Yes, wow. Indeed. Right. So, yeah, we're all pretty much a no on that.
I'm a no.
That's
on
a
that.
Hard no.
At least it's under 3 minutes long.
There you go.
It came in, it played some harpsichord, it was a little bit hypocritical, and it fucked off again.
Mm. Yeah, there you go. Right, okay, so that is the first five tracks. Let us take a break and enjoy the albums.
So we're going to look at the top 10, first of all, for the week of July 17th to 23rd, 1994. And I'll be honest, there's not a lot in the top 10 that is worth really talking about. Number 10 is The Cranberries, Everyone Else Is Doing It, Why Can't We?, which we have done on the podcast already. Number 9, Nina Simone's Best Of. Number 8, The Eagles' Best Of, one of their many best ofs, I'd imagine. Number 7, ELO's Very Best Of. Number 6 is Mariah Carey's Music Box, still hanging around Blimey. The top 10. Still there. Number 5, Whitesnake Greatest Hits. Number 4, Ace of Base, Happy Nation. Which we've done very Achtung. Recently. yeah, well. And number 3 is Wet's Greatest Hits. And number 2 is Prodigy's Music for the Gilded Generation, which was our last episode.
Exactly.
So that's what we've got. There's very little to like, new stuff coming out there. But there's actually some good ones to chat about in also out this week.
Okay.
Number 23, Aaliyah, Age Ain't Nothing But a Number. And I put that in just because that's a funny title, knowing that she banged R. Kelly.
Yeah. There you go.
Quite. L7's Hungry for Stink came out, got to number 26.
Nice. Bit of a letdown after Bricks Are Heavy, though, wasn't it?
It was.
Yeah,
it
Andre was all right. Is Fuel My Fire on that?
Yeah, oh, possibly. Yeah, maybe.
So.
Yeah.
I mean, Andre, it's all right. It's all
right. Andre!
It is. It's okay, yeah, but it's okay, coming off the back of an album like Bricks Are Heavy, you're almost on a hiding to nothing.
Their career never recovered, unfortunately.
No. They're still playing. I think they did.
They reformed, didn't they? Didn't they do a film? Like
they
a documentary
did.
Movie.
They
yeah.
did, yeah.
We saw them at Download and they were fun.
Oh, they were loads of fun.
Yeah.
All the hits, right?
They just played last month, the month before, they did a show in London where they played Bricks Are Heavy in full and then other stuff.
Oh,
so they're doing
that.
I'm still annoyed that I didn't see. I couldn't go. I was ill, so I couldn't go to the Faith No More L7 Angel Dust show.
I was at that at the Cambridge Corn Exchange. It was my second ever gig.
Whoa. Nice. Damn.
Yeah, I didn't.
Oh, you must have been. Like,
didn't see him on my favorite album.
Yeah, it was. And I mean, I was chatting to a friend of mine about this last night about like how cool it was to have like I don't know. It was the Cambridge Corn Exchange. What I think about maybe 1,800, 2,000 cap venue.
Yeah,
and to have that because I was living in Ely at the time, so it was like you know one stop on the fucking train.
Yeah,
and week in week out. There would just be amazing gigs. And at that time, it was literally every week, there was just something fucking incredible. I generally thought it was going to be like this forever.
Oh, right. That's how the world works.
Yeah. I was just like, oh, this is what it's like, isn't it? Right. You know, everything's brilliant. Everything's amazing. And there's an incredible gig every fucking week. And it was like, no, it's not.
Yeah, and now you're looking down the barrel of 50. Going,
And it cost, you know, and the best thing, that night cost me like, I think it was like £10 for the ticket.
I bet,
yeah, I know.
I bet.
Obscene.
I know. Yeah. Don't. Anyway, right.
Yeah, so, House of Pain released Same As It Ever Was, which got to number 8, which we chatted about briefly on our last episode.
Yeah, better than the first record.
Oh,
it's
a
really good album. Yeah,
it is good.
One that only got to number 53, Consolidated, Business of Punishment. Mm. And I'm assuming, I think that is the one with You Suck on it.
Featuring the Yeasty Boys, Yeasty Girls.
Yeah.
You Suck, Lick It Hard.
Killing Joke released Pandemonium, got to number 16. And again, we chatted about that briefly with Cliff, our last guest. You a fan of that one, Gaz?
Massive.
Really?
Yeah.
At the time? Or
that was the first Killing Joke album I bought.
Right.
After seeing them on Top of the Pops. Doing,
I
can see tomorrow. And he I just remember Jazz Coleman's eyes being like the size of fucking saucers.
Yeah.
Just be like, who is this guy? He's scary as fuck. Who is this guy? I thought they're a new band. I didn't know they'd been already been going like 16
forever
years
and ever, yeah, sure.
Or whatever. But yeah, that was the album that made me kind of fall in love with Killing Joke.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It got to number 16 as well. That's top 20.
I mean,
that
was quite. They called it a comeback at the time, I think.
Yeah.
I just remember it being like they were in Kerrang a lot of the time and stuff like this.
They got a load of press.
And Top of the Pops.
And NME as well.
Yeah.
You know, even in, because they were.
It just seemed like that was the album that kind of brought them back into the kind of public consciousness again after doing some really good stuff.
They had that industrial edge as well, didn't they? Obviously, you had Downward Spiral already out this year.
Exactly. Of course. And it was post Nirvana.
Yeah.
When all of a sudden, all these bands were going, we fucking love Killing Joke.
And there had been the whole thing about the riff from.
Come As You Are,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, they were in the talk for that.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, yeah, look at that. Warren G released Regulate, the G-Funk era, got to 25.
Oh, it's a great single. It's not a great record.
It's a terrible
record. I've never heard the whole album.
It's terrible.
I mean, I've heard it, but I've heard it through a couple of times. And like the fact that I didn't, you know, I was very much into that sound at the time. And the fact that I didn't kind of listen to that album all the time tells you what you need to know about it.
All right, fair
it's
enough.
A classic single, not a classic album.
Yeah, exactly.
One of those. Okay. Here's one, and I know nothing about it. I bet you boys do. Gilby Clark released Pawn Shop Guitars. Got to number 39.
Yep.
So it's the top 40 record.
I heard it. I heard it. It wasn't really for me.
No. It's nowhere near as good as the Izzy Stradlin.
Juju Hounds record.
That's the one. Great. It was self-titled. Well, it had Pressure Drop on it and shuffle it all.
Was that around the same time as well?
A couple of years beforehand, I think. Before, 92, maybe. Right. Yeah.
Well, I mean, of all the Guns N' Roses offshoot solo projects, which one's the best?
Slash your Snake Pit is 5 o'clock somewhere.
Ah.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, fine. Probably. Is Gilby Clark's the worst?
Duff McKagan's, was it Believe In Me? That was fucking awful.
Yeah. Right.
Terrible.
I don't think I've even ever
Fair enough,
that. I was never going to pick up a Duff album.
So to speak. Yeah.
I did because... like millions of others, we're just like, it's someone from GNR.
Sure.
Ergo, it's going to be fucking incredible.
I must hear it.
And it really wasn't. Nah. It was awful.
I mean, I'd like to have heard a Tracy and Roberta solo album.
Yeah.
Well, possibly a Dizzy Reed.
Yeah, I think it was called... Yeah, well, Dizzy Reed's called Give Me Some Reggae.
Yeah. Dizzy, King of Reed. King of Beers Reed.
It's 10 hours long, Luke. Amazing. Okay, Powderfinger released Parables for Wooden Ears, their debut.
Oh, Powderfinger. Yeah.
Don't remember them at all.
I remember them being around, but I don't remember any of their songs. I cannot bring to mind one of their songs. But they were getting talked about.
They were.
Getting, you know... press at the time. Were they Australian?
Yeah, we're Australian, yeah.
Right.
He gives a fuck. Right.
All right, Dave.
Just writing up all Australian music in one sentence.
I think you're forgetting the wonderful Midnight Oil.
And Silverchair.
Stephen Dennis.
Oh, yeah. Don't make you feel good.
Yeah, exactly. I think we just proved that point wrong. At the Gates released Terminal Spirit Disease. Didn't know they were going at that point. At the Gates. What sort of metal are they now?
At the Gates.
Are they death metal?
Yeah.
Death metal. Right. Again, I get confused.
I wasn't listening to anything like that in 94, really.
No.
To be fair, I'd already discovered Entombed by 94.
Oh, Jesus.
But yeah, seeing the Wolverine Blues video on Noisy Mothers. Remember Noisy Mothers?
Absolutely.
I bought an earache sampler. It's called Earplugs. You know, it's like budget kind of £3 samplers.
No, they put them out all the time.
Yeah, exactly. And it had Wolverine Blues on it, so that was it had a lot of dog shit on it, like Brutal Truth. So I was exposed to all this shit. But even at the time, I was like, this is terrible. But Entombed
did it have Fudge Tunnel on there? Because
it did, and it had Cathedral doing I think it was Ride or Hopkins, which Find a General.
Right, yeah, sure,
great.
I'm very much of the opinion that you only need two death metal bands in your life, really, and they are At the Gates and Carcass. So if you got both of those, you don't really need to.
You're covered, I see.
Exactly.
We've got Sir Mix-a-Lot released Chief Boot Knocker.
God, in 94.
In 94, exactly.
Fucking hell.
I suspect, right, I did go to New York for the summer of 94, and I visited my dad over there, and he had MTV in the apartment. Mm. So I did see, 4 weeks' worth of MTV. Mm-hmm. And there was a video which was Sir Mix-a-Lot, put him on the glass.
I remember that.
And I imagine that's probably on this album. And essentially, the video was a woman washing his car in bikinis.
You shock me.
And then he would say, put him on the glass, and they would press their breasts up against the window.
Wow.
That was kind of the video. So I'm imagining that was the single from this album. And if it was all like that, it's not a very good album.
No.
Because that was a pretty pony
and
song.
It's an even worse feminist essay.
Quite. Yeah. The Melvins released Prick. I don't remember that album.
I don't remember that album.
No. That was a major label year, 94, wasn't it?
It would have been, probably.
I thought they had three.
Yeah, they did, but I think they had a clause in their contract that they could still release loads of unlistenable crap on other labels.
Oh, okay.
Like Amphetamine Reptile or something. But yeah, what was it? It was Stag, Houdini, and the other one.
Stone of Witch, yeah.
Right.
Which are the only three you need, let's be absolutely honest about this.
If our friend Grant's listening to this, he'll be very angry.
I'm sorry, Grant. Apoplectic, but, you know.
NOFX released Punk in Drublick.
Yeah.
Yep.
And, you know, they're one of those bands that I never get into because I'm not a big fan of the punk stuff anyway. And every time I've heard a NoFX song, I've gone, oh, that sounds like all the other NoFX songs to me.
I mean, there's, you know, if we're talking about bands having an oeuvre, like we're talking about Rolling Stones, NoFX, you know, there's a couple of NoFX songs I like. I like the cover of Kill All the White Men.
Yeah, absolutely. That's good fun.
They had one good album. Was it So Long and Thanks for All the Shoes? I think it was about 96, 97. Yeah. Okay. I'm Telling Tim on it and Murder the Government. That's really good.
Okay.
And if they've had decent drugs and they've got decent beer, they can be one of the best live bands you ever see.
People do say they're a
great
live
show. But I've seen them when
they've
been great, and I've seen them when they've been absolutely shockingly bad.
Right. My main memory of NoFX is the album they released called Heavy Petting Zoo.
Yep.
And the band cover where he's fingering a sheep.
Yep.
Which is absolutely hilarious.
Yeah.
I mean, there you go.
And then the last one I've got a mention of here is the debut album by Marilyn Manson, Portrait of an American Family.
Oh, dear.
Which is 1994. That's earlier than I thought.
No, it's about
any
when
Marilyn
I
Manson started.
Yeah.
It doesn't do anything there. It's not until you get to the next one.
Antichrist, wasn't it?
Was the next one?
No, the next one's
Smell the Cloth.
That's brilliant.
Smells Like Children. No.
Smells Like Children.
Smells Like Children. Yeah. Right. Oh, yeah, that's 1995.
I immediately thought, no, that can't be it. But of course, that's it.
Right. Okay, yeah. So yeah, I mean, I must admit, I wasn't aware of Marilyn Manson at this point at all.
Didn't give a fuck, always thought it was shit.
I don't know whether that was because I wasn't going to, you know, the
Rock
right
City.
In inverted commas clubs, or if it was just that he was much bigger in the States when he started out.
It was only really when Sweet Dreams came out in this country, that's when it started getting traction.
That's when it got the beautiful traction.
It was like when Kerrang started covering him in like 95.
And I've got a feeling he broke the UK before he broke the States.
No. I'm sure Sweet Dreams went massive in America.
No, but Sweet Dreams was
and that's
after
when it got to the point where Kerrang felt they had to start putting him on the front cover. And I don't think he'd even done a UK tour and he'd already been on the front cover of Kerrang. It got that fucking big.
Because it was because the thing was, at the time, it was a kind of a Marilyn Manson and Korn were the two things. Mm-hmm,
right.
And I was very much kind of on Team Korn at that moment in time. Mm-hmm. Very, very, very briefly. That fucking got very old very quickly for
me. First album's still good.
I mean, I don't think it is.
Is it?
I think
I've not heard it in the years, but I really do. I think I like the second album.
Go back to either of them. They're not as good as you think they are.
Okay.
But yeah.
Fine. All right. Well, look, that's the last album I've got. And not wall-to-wall classics, but again, this is 1 week of releases.
Yeah.
And you're talking about, thinking at the time that there was going to be good gigs every week, and it doesn't happen. I still am amazed whenever we do these sections and you're like, oh, this is 1 week, and even if there are three albums coming out that you go, well, that's still a classic. That's a fucking insane thing to think, because I can't imagine that happening anymore.
No.
But that's because I'm 50. So. Let's get into track number 6, which is called Moon Is Up.
Okay, so after a couple of plods, we're going a little bit further up tempo again.
And this one, the band seemed very proud of the fact that Charlie Watts isn't playing actual drums on this. He's playing a suitcase and a bin and a staircase. That was what was suggested to him. It's like, he wanted a different sound, a different feel. How do you get this feel we're looking for? Oh, playing on a suitcase and a bin. I mean, that to me smacks of someone who's never been in a proper studio before. It's like, I reckon you could get that sound with some drums if you wanted to.
That's a really jarring effect on Mick's voice there, I think.
Weird. It's very strange.
Yeah, I don't care for this one, man. It's got a bit of a plodder. It's got this languid slide guitar in it. Tuneless.
Yeah.
Kind of feels a bit like a demo.
Not right. I can't get behind this one either, I'm afraid. Gaz, you...
I quite like it. After, no harpsichord, so it's instantly...
Oh, I see, right.
Instantly better than the previous
instantly
track.
Better.
Sorry. I'm really anti-fucking harpsichord.
Apparently, yeah.
Yeah, it's obviously done something to me. I always kind of liked it. I like the kind of opening lick on it. Nice kind of like harmonica solo again.
Mm-hmm.
Nice pre-chorus. Not a massive fan of the kind of vocal effect, whatever the fuck that
whatever
is.
Whatever it is, yeah.
Hey, lads, I've got a new preset box. Should we have some fun?
Don Wiles taking the pace.
Yeah. I think it's decent. I mean, you know, it's serviceable. We're kind of getting to that.
Okay.
The last couple we've had, the worst I really liked. Yeah, New Face is not at all. Moon is it's
back
all right.
Up a bit with this. For
yeah,
you?
It's serviceable. It's all right. But again, it's got kind of like different bits and bobs going on. I like the fact you said about, you know, he's not using the drums, he's using like a suitcase and a bin and stuff. I like to think that's where Slipknot got their ideas from.
Yeah. Big Stones fans.
Yeah, big one. Stones fans.
That's where Slipknot got big
Charlie fans, I'm sure. But you know,
that's where Slipknot get their idea from.
Singular.
Yeah,
sorry.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, I don't really get this. And on a 15-track album,
how does this make the cut?
Exactly. Yep. I mean, again, you did say Don Was made have reeled them in a bit on some of the ideas that they put into songs. I feel maybe he did. Maybe he, you know, had to get them to bin 20 even worse other songs. But surely, I think this could do with 5 songs taken off. It's 15 tracks.
Oh,
you don't
yeah.
need that.
I mean, it was someone else going to bring, like, bring it into the table like towards the end. But right. you know, now's a good enough time to bring it up as any. But we're in that era of, you know, you think 1994. This is that prime era of albums being specifically recorded for CD.
Absolutely.
1994.
Yes, absolutely.
You look at the original version of this when it came out on vinyl in 1994, the same as a lot of albums at the time, they were all getting released on double vinyl because it was so fucking long.
Right.
All
right,
albums
sure.
were being marketed for the CD market. It was like, okay, so now it was kind of the first time they weren't kind of restricted by kind of two sides of wax where you're going to put 20 odd minutes.
Oh, it's only 45. You're going to pack it all in.
Exactly. And it was taken to the kind of nth degree with fucking Load, which was literally, was it 78 minutes and 59 seconds or something? Amount of
Jesus.
Like audio you can put on a single CD.
Well, we came across it last week. We did Prodigy.
Musical Generation.
And that, he actually had to cut down.
Yeah, well, Metallica did as well.
Yeah.
I think, what's the last track on Load? Is it The Outlaw Torn? They had to shave off like 4 minutes or something.
Just a quick fade out sort of thing.
Yeah, basically. Because the song, just like, you listen to it, because it's like an eight and a half minute song, you know, you'll get to it eventually when you do it on here. But it just kind of just fades to nothing. And it's like, oh.
Yeah, no, that's...
And I think that I think it released the full length version as a B-side on Hero of the Day, I think.
Because people were crying out for it.
Exactly, right? Exactly.
Yeah, no, it does. It is entirely true that, you know, people are like, oh, you've got this much space to play with.
Yeah.
And there were definitely certain people who went, oh, that means we have to fill it. And it just doesn't.
There was a lot of people. But we're kind of doing the same now in regards to, like, the streaming world that we live in now. Like on True Cult Pop, an episode we recorded like last week, we reviewed the new Beyonce album.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it's like fucking 83 minutes or something in length, right? There is an amazing 10, 12 track album in there.
Uh-huh.
You know, if you, there's a lot of
editor.
Right. It's just like, it seems we've gone back to that again now.
Well, I suppose there are no restrictions on what you do.
No,
at the minute,
but
yeah.
There fucking should be.
No, there absolutely should be.
The strongest albums we reviewed this week were I think Steve's album of the month was like, it's like 27 minutes long.
Oh, wow.
And one of the, there was a couple of, there's a new album by this band called Ancient Teeth, who are fucking incredible. And it's like 32 minutes or something.
There you go.
You can still fucking do it. Just do that.
Yeah,
just
honestly.
Do that. Yeah. And especially now in this streaming era that we're in, people's attention spans are literally like just so minuscule.
Yeah.
Quite why these massive artists feel that they have to put out this grand statement of 80 odd minutes of fucking music. No one's going to fucking
listen to it. Start at the beginning and listen.
Well, unless you're fucking reviewing it. So guilty.
Yeah, you are. Okay.
But yeah.
All right. Well, I think this
is an absolute filler. Yeah,
Moon Is Up could have gone. No one would really mind.
In fact, I would be in favour of it.
Sure.
Let's do the next one. This one called Out of Tears.
You'd be over the moon.
Over the moon. I see what you did there.
Out of Tears. This one is not a single. Oh, God. This was the third single. Came out December of 1994 and it got to number 36. Mm. This is... we're into a piano ballad. And I'll be honest, whenever I heard this straight up, I was like, maybe I'll be more into this, because I love a kind of a maudlin, slow, big, overblown ballad. So I'm like, maybe I'll be into this one. It's a strange choice for a single.
I don't really care for mixed voice on this.
Oh, really?
This reminds me, just in terms of the inflections and stuff, of Elton John's I Want Love. That bit there, the chorus,
yeah,
reminds me of that.
totally forgot about that song. Robert Downey Jr. was in the
video.
Absolutely,
yeah.
That may explain why I don't really care for this. I'm famously wrong about Elton John.
It's a breakup song. It's about the pain of losing love and, you know, the agony and confusion of being left in the lurch. And I actually don't mind this one.
Yeah, that's nothing for me, this one.
Right. I think there's a catchiness to the chorus. Got some strings and a minor key thing going on. A plaintive guitar solo. And while I say I don't mind it, I want to point out I don't mind it. I don't think this is great. But I think this is okay.
I suspect this is a song that if I lived with the album in that 90s way where I bought it and had to listen to it because I've... Because in the 90s...
You get your money's
worth. Because you will not give up on a record in the 90s. Not that you will now.
It's an investment. Exactly. Your pocket money was an investment. Exactly. Your paper and money was an investment.
I suspect this one would have grown on me, but as it stands, I'm like...
Yeah.
It doesn't hit
so
me.
So you don't remember this from the time?
Oh, no.
Because this was a single as well. Okay, fine. Gaz, do you remember from the time?
Oh, yeah, massively. Yeah. This... For me, this was the third single, right?
It was, yeah.
Yeah. The Christmas ballad.
Yeah, exactly. December, you know, get those Christmas market in.
Christmas makes sense.
You were saying you were surprised that this was a single, a choice as a single. I think this is a perfect example of a single.
Just coming off the back of the other two, I'm like, I would have kept on going on that, but for a Christmas market?
Yeah.
Yeah, I get it. Absolutely, I can see that.
I adore this song. This is one of my favourite Stones ballads.
Oh,
there with Wild Horses and Angie for me.
That's big talk.
Yeah. This is always one of my favourites, like, as a 16-year-old who'd had his heart broken. You don't get to this sort of age without that shit happening once or twice. You know?
And, yeah, I imagine, on a live show, on the tour, this is a lighters in the air moment.
Classic lighters in the air.
Man. Arms round.
That piano, I love that piano intro. Yeah. It was Matey from, who did Black Crowes, wasn't it?
Yes,
Lavelle. It's got to be Lavelle.
Chuck Lavelle.
When the Stones kind of get it right, for me, like, few can touch them. And this is one of those times on here where they get it absolutely fucking nailed on for
me. Right.
This probably should have been, this should have been like probably a second single. I think it would have been a bigger hit.
Oh, I see.
I think it's strong enough. This, as much as I love You Got Me Rocking, I think that's classic fucking Stones. But I think this is a much better song for me. This is like, again, like what I was saying about early, by this kind of point in their career, they still kind of gave a fuck enough to have a bit of kind of enough quality control on the stuff which they knew was good.
Mm-hmm.
It's not phoned in. This is not dialed in at all. I love Jagger's voice on it.
Mm-hmm.
For me, this is the second best song on the album.
Right. I do like this one. It's going into that big chorus. I think it really works well.
Yeah. I think it's great. When the Stones can do this stuff so well. And this is like one of the last times where they actually wrote a song like this and got it right for me. Because on future albums after this, they tried
writing this. Well, they do a piano ballad.
And it was rubbish.
I see. Yeah. Right. Yeah. No, I think this works. I do think this works well. Yeah. It's the second longest song on the album, which for a big piano ballad, I guess makes sense because it's overblown in a lot of ways. I reckon you could trim a minute off, that's fine. But I like what it's doing.
Yeah,
I prefer this of the singles. I prefer this. That's because I wasn't overly impressed with the first two.
Fair.
But yeah, I think this works. Okay.
I'm the outlier, man. I'm the outlier here.
You got so bored with the song, you actually literally just went on your phone and started catching up on your correspondence.
All right, let's do the next one then. Track number 8.
I Go Wild. I said it like that, but that's what it's called. It's
definitely Silence.
That's the same drum intro.
We're going back up tempo again, though.
We are, indeed. This was the fourth single from July 1905, so like a year after it came out. Got to number 29.
7 months after the third single.
Oh, indeed. Yeah, there was a big gap Maybe they were on tour.
They were on tour. Summer of 95, they were the big Wembley gigs, I remember.
Chuck another single out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I, 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 I lean towards the more up-tempo stuff. This is by no means a classic, but I like it by virtue. It's got a bit more life. I've written here like I'm some kind of fucking 70-year-old man. It romps along at a merry pace.
Oh, no.
That's something I've actually written down.
Burn your notebook.
But we do, yeah, we do get some good fucking lyrics in this, though, don't we?
There are some spicy ones in this.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think the sound of it is very trademark Stones. That guitar lick is very much, oh, yeah, that's a bit of Keith there. And it's very trademark Jagger vocals as well. The lyrics, again, I don't know if I want a 51-year-old man saying, "You whipped me, I'm hurting, abused me for certain, and slavery should not exist. Is this what I get? A poison kiss?" I mean, that's a pretty hot take, Mick.
Yeah.
Calm down.
Well, yeah, there we
that's
go.
That's going out on a limb, frankly.
Yeah. That's your takeaway from slavery. that's what you... Yeah, okay. All right, yeah, no, fair enough. It is about you, Mick. Yeah, you're right. but I mean, Femme Fatales and Dirty Bitches.
Mm-hmm.
Daylight Drabs and Nighttime Witches.
Yeah.
And, of course, I mean, you know... Alcoholic Cunts Like Knives.
Amazing.
Alcoholic Cunts Like Knives. Yeah. Let's say it again. Alcoholic Cunts Like Knives. What a lyric. Yeah. Came out of nowhere, that one, didn't
it? I think Voodoo Lounge was the first Stones album that had a parental advisory sticker on it.
Oh, damn. They had to for this.
They had to.
Right.
Even though, with the exception of me, I think every other person that bought the sound was over 18. Yeah. So I don't really need that.
I think what it meant is it was advised for parents.
Right.
you should be a... You need to be a parent if you want to enjoy this.
Fair. I mean, the thing is, the line there is he's saying the doctor has told him to avoid some stuff. The doctor said, avoid waitresses with broken noses, check out girls striking poses, politicians, garish wives with alcoholic cunts like knives. I think I might be switching doctors if that was the conversations I'd be having. Doctor, what should I be looking out for?
Do you think they should have said vagina? Alcohol-dependent vaginas like scalpels. I don't know. That would have been a more medical
phrasing. I would have preferred that. Thank you.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. I think this is another pretty average Stones song. Do you remember this as a single?
Yep.
You do? Right.
I remember Mick introducing... I don't know why I remember this shit, but I remember him introducing the video to it on Top of the Pops.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
They got him on, but they didn't play live, right?
They ain't got that
money, have they?
Top of the Pops, no.
No.
Hey, Rolling Stones, you want to come and do Top of the Pops?
Well, no.
Are you sure it wasn't just fucking Phil Cool
doing
an
impression? Didn't we already do that in the 60s?
Yeah. Just run that one again.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I'm not overly fussed on that.
I always liked it. Always liked it. Big chorus... Obvious single, kind of, you know, it's got that kind of classic Stones, kind of lazy, languid groove. If Charlie Watts was, I know he's taken a bit of a kicking from you, Chris. But it, for me, Charlie Watts, his drumming style was always the Stones' secret weapon.
Oh.
His in the pocket playing.
Not their cunts like knives, so that's a pretty secret
weapon. No, fuck that bollocks.
I
don't listen to Stones' albums for you know, lyrical enlightenment.
That's true.
I really don't. It was like a mate of mine was asking me if I'd heard the new Mary Chan album like a few weeks ago. I was like, yeah, I think it's pretty decent. And he was like, lyrics are shit. I'm like, I don't listen to Mary Chan albums for fucking great lyrics.
They're drunk Scotsmen.
Exactly.
There's no
right?
profundity.
No, you know, the best it ever got was, I want to die like Jesus Christ. Yeah. I want to die on a bed of spikes.
That'll do.
I'm fine with that. Shit up. Sounds great. But no, you know, Charlie Watts is in the pocket playing. It was almost like it was always went unnoticed until you actually listen in. His drumming style was, no one could drum like that. And I'm saying that as a kind of ex-drummer myself. You try and do that kind of, almost like windscreen washer kind of thing on a hi-hat and try and play like Charlie Watts. It's fucking hard.
The thing is, I understand that if you're talking about 60s and some 70s Stones, because some of the drums on that is wonderful.
Yeah.
But on this album, I don't hear it. I find it's a very dry drums.
Always liked it. Always. Always dug his sound, especially on this album. I love his groove on this album.
And that is why you're here, though, Gaz. For someone that appreciates the fucking. Do you know what I mean? The thing. We always want a patsy. Look at this guy. What does he fucking know? We'd always rather be positive about something negative, you know? Yeah. Unless it's Enigma. Obviously. I'm not bringing a fucking Enigma fan in here.
Christians, yeah.
Right. Right, okay. Should we do the next track, which is called Brand New Car?
If we have to.
Yes.
Hello, John. Got a new motor.
I mean, this is quite the song.
It's
called Brand New Car.
Yeah. Right? But it's not about a car, is it?
This is a metaphor, you say.
Bollocks. Yeah. I mean, what's it about, Dave? Oh
my God.
I mean, look, I've put this as daytime stripper music.
What, a strip club you can take your kids to?
Yeah, it's like where they're partying.
Right.
Like,
then?
There's one near Dunstable where they just literally pass around a fucking pint pot and pound coins.
I went on a stag weekend in London years ago, and for some reason we ended up in the Flying Scotsman. Thank fuck that place is gone now. You know the Flying Scotsman by King's Cross? Never heard of it?
No.
It was this dodgy fucking pub around the back of King's Cross, stag weekend, and all that shit. You know, and there was some girl, some blatantly kind of sexually exploited girl on stage. And there was like a plastic, not even a glass beaker, it was a plastic pint glass getting passed around. Woman who was, she'd just kind of shake it in front of your face. And I'd be like, what? I'd be like, and she'd be like, if you don't put a pound in, you're going to have to go in the other room.
Fine. Yeah.
So I went in the other room. I was like, okay, thanks. And it wasn't even like a door. There was just like this like kind of like sack. What do you call it? It's like medieval sacks.
Burlap.
That's the one. Yeah, basically, instead of a door, you pulled it aside and went through to the other bar.
Just so that horrible. So you couldn't see through it.
Exactly. Jesus Christ. You couldn't see through to the sin.
Yeah. Don't know if you know what else is also opaque, though, guys. Wood. A more traditional door material.
Yeah. What is this black magic you talk about of wood?
No, we shall put you in a sack cloth. Fuck me. It is itchy and you will.
Hey. Right, I mean, this song is, so obviously, this is lascivious in all kinds of unpleasant ways, man.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is a man that's nearly qualifying for a fucking bus pass.
Absolutely.
Right? And the car is the woman. It's I don't care for this.
No, I would encourage anyone to go and read the entire lyrics for this song.
I would encourage everyone
not to. It's Chaucer-esque, isn't
it? Because... you know, it's the Chancer-ish. Least. It's the least subtle metaphor you could put.
Yeah.
Let's just do this. This one stood out to me. Take her on the highway for a little spin. I want to see the kind of shape she's in. And I got a brand new star. Jack her up, baby. Go on, open the hood. I want to check if the oil smells good. Smells like caviar.
Oh.
What the fuck? I'm just creeped out.
You need
out
to go to doctors, mate. Get some of that. That special cream.
Go to a more classy pub. Well, you have to pay £2.
Don't go to the Flying Scotsman at King's Cross.
The thing is, what people don't realise is that the lady in question was Nicola Sturgeon.
Hey! Boom, boom, pow. Fuck me.
You got a symbol.
Oh, dear God. I think this is a terrible idea. I can't believe it was allowed to happen.
No. Even I can't defend this one.
No.
Fair enough, Gaz. I think that's fair.
That says it all, really, doesn't it?
I did write...
Dirty Old Man.
If I was going to write a song about this, which is called Brand New Car, and it was going to have double entendres, and if I was writing about my own car, I think it would be along the lines of, it's definitely a bit flat on one side.
Yeah.
I'm always worried it might have a breakdown halfway through, and I'll have to phone a man to help me finish the journey. And it's getting an increasingly worrying wet patch in the trunk.
Yeah, yeah. And the airbags have deployed and gone saggy.
Indeed, yeah. Terrible idea. This song is an awful, awful idea.
If I want to hear kind of, you know, cars as metaphors for women, I'll just listen to AC/DC, really. You should run along.
Oh, well,
she's a fast machine. She kept the motor clean. She's the best damn woman I've ever seen.
Yeah.
No.
And that's fine.
And I'll let it go with ACDC.
I've got no issues with ACDC, even though they're essentially the same fucking age as the Stones now. ACDC do all that kind of, you know, whoops, Mrs. Carry On shit.
I
fucking love that. And that's fine because it's done. It's knowing enough to be done with a nod and a wink. They know they're not sexual predators. We know they're not sexual predators, even though he does wear a school uniform.
What we know about them fundamentally is that they are Australians and they don't know any better.
There he is. Here he is. Fuck me.
If you are an Australian listener, I'm only fucking joking. I
don't not here anymore, David. It really doesn't matter.
So, Your Honour, I'd like to defend my client. Say he is from Brisbane. So, case dismissed. Yeah, didn't he? Just didn't know.
Oh. If only I'd known that, it wouldn't have even got to court.
No, yeah, I don't hate all Australians. I just hate one Australian enough that it's really coloured me against the entire country.
I hate any Australian Stefan that Davis. Plays cricket because they're all cheating cunts.
Oh. There we go. See, it's the first time cricket's been mentioned in this podcast. And the last.
And the last. Oh, was that it? Okay, I'll get it out of the way.
Oh, all right. God. There you go. All right, let's do one more song in this section before we break for singles. But this one, is track number 10, is called Sweethearts Together. Oh, I've written Sweat Hearts Together. In
Sweat Hearts.
Sweat Bands Together. Sweat Leaf.
Sweat Loaf.
Sweat Loaf.
Sweat Loaf.
Buttle Surfers.
Buttle Surfers.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic.
So this is kind of almost like a Buddy Holly-esque rock and roll love song, isn't it?
I've said it sounds like when Nick Berry did Heartbeat.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Oh, you've just fucking ruined it for me now.
Yeah.
You.
Yeah. It's like they're trying to write a song for a 60s movie, or a movie about the 60s, and they're trying to make it sound authentic. That's like, I don't get this.
I mean, I would say the people that ruin this song are the Rolling Stones.
Sure.
I find this one quite tough to listen to, man, if I'm honest with you.
Oh, this would be another take this off the album for me. This is, okay, we can do without this.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, it comes back to my point earlier was like, if the Stones had stopped writing any new music in 1983... the world would have been fine and we wouldn't have had to listen to stuff like this.
Yeah, but by that point, any new Rolling Stones product was basically an advert for a tour. Yeah.
Oh, you're entirely right. Like, you know, as we
anything
said,
after Tattoo You, and I'd include this and Still Will, as much as I love both those albums, they were just fucking walking adverts for the inevitable Enorma Dome tour.
If someone had said to them, oh, right, look, no, not one person is going to buy this album, but we're going to use it and... It's just an advert. They'd have been fine because you're going to make $320 million off the fucking tour.
Yeah, but welcome to music in 2024.
Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely.
But even in 1994, you know, they've been going. This was their 30th anniversary of their debut album, right, that year.
Yeah.
And even at this point in a career, even if there's an album coming out and say it's got two or three good songs on, I'd be more than happy with that. With a band of 30 years into their career, and if it's got two or three songs that will fit into the set, I'd be fine with that.
I know what you mean.
This isn't one of them.
No, absolutely.
Full disclosure.
But again, and a Gabba remix of Jumpin' Jack Flash.
Jesus Christ. Lord. This is one of the longest songs on here as well.
Yeah.
It fucking certainly feels like it.
Yeah.
I've put here two little comments. Accordion, for fuck's sake. Yeah. And this album is starting to feel very long indeed.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, fair. I mean, it's got a nice kind of Graham Parsons kind of country vibe to it again, but... Yeah, it's just totally unnecessary.
Sure. It is exactly. I don't think there's any real tune to this.
No,
there's
there
no
isn't
hook
at
to
all.
It.
It's vibe, absolute filler. It's total, filler.
You know, it's fine, but it sounds like if this had come out in 1968 or 1973,
yeah,
very different.
Fuck.
But Jesus,
there's that fucking accordion.
There it is.
Oh.
There it is.
Accordion.
All of a sudden,
man.
It's LMLO.
Yeah.
Good mining.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Well, no, I would skip this every time.
Oh yeah. Fuck yeah. Let's look, man.
Yeah.
Let's skip this and move on to the singles.
Let's do the singles. All right.
Let's go.
Yes.
Let me get
the best bit of the podcast.
Let's get
my game
here.
Face on, right? Hang on.
Right, you ready?
Hang on, I'm adjusting.
You ready?
Motherfucker, let's go.
You're not going to remember any of these fucking songs,
I know,
though,
because
you're useless.
I know.
Ah. Okay, so singles, we're looking again the week of July 17th to 23rd. The top 10, there's only a couple of new entries that we haven't seen yet. Number 10 isn't on Spotify, and I'm very disappointed because...
Damn.
Fuck it, I'm going to look it up on YouTube.
Look up on YouTube, do it. Oh! Okay, I'll give Dave a chance.
Number 10 in the
charts. I'll give Dave a chance.
We are in the summer of...
Reggae!
Reggae and reggae cover versions.
Where's Stephen Hill?
Exactly, I was like, oh, wait, that's exactly why I was like, oh, I wish I could play this.
Ribbity riddle.
Fucking
hell. I don't remember what this is called.
No, you won't know this. Gaz, can you tell me who it is?
Was it CJ Lewis?
It is CJ Lewis.
CJ Lewis.
CJ Lewis and his cover of...
Uptight.
Yeah.
Stevie Wonder.
Uptight. Everything's all right. Fucking dog shit.
I'd be proud of knowing that.
Honest
I'm not.
God.
Believe it. This is... I finally have a release for the bullshit that's been in my brain like, my whole life.
Well, okay, you're going to get... Well done, mate. Well done.
Thanks.
Indeed.
I got CJ Lewis.
CJ Lewis, everything's a
Jagger's so proud of me.
Fucking God. Right, number 9 in the charts is the only other new entry, and you're going to get this one straight away, I'm sure.
That's a Regulator Orangey.
There we go.
Regulator. Mate Dog.
Exactly.
Classic
it is.
Album.
Exactly.
No, classic single.
Classic
terrible
single.
Album.
Terrible album.
Thanks.
Yeah. And I remember. Yeah. I remember at the time thinking this was awful. I really, really didn't like it.
Yeah, but you were really against G-Funk
in
general. I
was very much against G-Funk.
This is fucking brilliant,
and thing is,
old-timer, right? This is an old-timer. It is.
It is a classic of the genre, definitely. I still, you know, in my head, I'm almost liking it ironically at this point.
No irony for me.
Right, but it's huge. It is.
Rhythm is the bass, and the bass is the treble.
Yeah, that's a good line.
Come on,
yeah, that's a good line.
Chords, strings, we brings melody. G funk with rhythm is life,
what's
and life
the,
is a rhythm.
What's the Disposable Heroes line? The bass and the treble don't make a rebel. Having your life together does.
Yeah,
another one. Another good line.
Great line.
All right, so yeah, that's number 9 anyway. I think the rest of the...
That got higher than 9, though, didn't it? I'm sure I shot them out.
Oh, it's very possible.
I'm sure it went top 3.
It's just the first time we've seen
Yeah.
Number 8 is 2 Cowboys with Everybody Gone For Gone, which we did last week. 7, Take That, Love Ain't Here Anymore. 6, Let Loose, Crazy For You.
Best pop song of the 90s,
it's
lads.
Fucking fantastic. It's
that's
there.
All I'm saying.
Interesting.
I'm saying nothing.
Oh,
well it's in the maybe poll.
Oh,
is
hello.
It?
Okay.
Is it?
Number 5 is Aswad with Shine. Number 4 is The Grid, Swamp Thing. Number 3,
brilliant.
BC52's Meet the Flintstones.
Oh,
fuck
you.
2, All For One, I Swear.
Brilliant.
And number 1 is Still... Wet, wet, wet. Love is all around.
Wasn't this around the time where Marty Pello discovered heroin?
He was always fucking going to, wasn't he? He's from fucking Glasgow.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He was a painter decorator from Glasgow.
Yeah.
Apparently, he just loved a scrap as well.
Loved the scrap. Yeah. Loved the needle hanging out of his arm.
To be fair, mate, I was going to say maybe the heroin kind of toned that down, but I've read Mark Lanigan's biography and he still managed to get into a fair few fucking rucks. Scagged up.
Right. Yep.
All right, so that's the top 10, and like I say, only a couple of new entries, but we do have quite a few other singles. So, all right,
do it.
Let's get
do it.
Let's start
do
this
it.
One.
Come on,
are you ready for this? So this one came out in the same week and got to number 9.
Let's get ready. PJ and Duncan.
PJ and Duncan.
No, that's wrong. It was PJ and Duncan, aka. Shut up, Dave. Don't copy me. They're on Top of the Pops last night as well. We're doing a song I do not fucking remember. It was like the third single off the Crazy Cats album.
Good Christ.
Don't even remember it.
Why would you?
Parts in Crime will never do time. A sentence for us has to end in a rhyme.
Wow. Right. Lovely.
Spit that fucking knowledge
easy. When we rock the mic right.
Well, okay. You're getting
when we rock the mic, we rock the mic shite.
Well played. Well
Blind
played.
Man. Oh, Spooky Man.
Spooky Man. Right, this one, apparently this only got to number 41, and I'm surprised that, I don't know whether it was re-released and got higher later, but... Follow-up to a huge other single.
Oh. Is it Coolio?
It is Coolio.
Fantastic Voyage.
Fantastic Voyage. Very well done.
Nice,
yeah.
Dave.
Just from the drums on that.
Nice one, sir.
Lovely stuff. Yeah, I'm impressed.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm surprised I only got to 41.
Yeah, but this was 94.
Yeah.
That's not a follow-up to
No.
Gangs Paradise
was 95. November 95. Yeah, and then that was re-released, I think.
That's what I'm thinking.
And the Hot and 1, 2, 3, 4, something... for that and all that.
Yeah, that first Coolio Freddy's album, man. The first Coolio album that's got Fantastic Voyage on it, and it's got what's it fucking called? Oh, that's...
It's called It Takes a Thief is the name of the album.
Yeah, there's a second single on it that's fucking brilliant, man.
Mama, I'm in Love with a Gangster?
No.
Hands on My Nuts?
No.
I'm sorry.
I'm just reading through.
I remember.
Okay. End Closet Sticky Fingers.
What's it called?
Ugly Bitches.
Closet Sticky Fingers.
There is one. The very last one is called I Remember.
That's a fucking brilliant tune.
Is it?
Yeah. It's a really, really good remix of it as well. It used to be on a skate video.
Do you reckon it's better than Ugly Bitches, which is the track before?
I don't chance. I doubt it.
Lord. Oh, Coolio. What was it? He started putting out cookbooks, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
He was like a TV chef or something.
And all of the recipes were crack.
Yeah.
Didn't Mayhew from the Misfits, didn't he have a cookbook out as well.
Did
he really? I don't know. It was the guitarist. Is it Doyle?
Oh. Yeah.
Widow's Peak, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, Doyle, yeah, he's like a vegan, hardcore vegan, isn't he?
Good God.
He released a vegan cookbook.
I mean, that's the only kind of vegan he's going to be, isn't
Yeah.
He's never going to be a relaxed vegan, is he? Just there like this. Oh, no, I'm quite mellow in my views. I have a bit of meat.
Yeah, if he's hungover.
I'm not strict on it.
I describe myself more of a freegan.
I just float about.
Oh, man. All right, this one only got to number 52, and we've kind of done it before, but I'm sticking it on again because fuck it, because it's still
check it out. It's Age of Panic by
Sensor. Yes,
brilliant.
What a tune.
What an album.
Ah,
what an album.
Yeah,
that's got to feature pretty high on your
end of year. I'd imagine so.
I'd imagine both of you, I'm sure.
You know, we did the special on it, and it just reminded me how much it made a massive impact.
That special got a fuckload of traction, didn't it?
Really did. Made Sensor listen to it.
I know, right?
Sensor themselves listen to it.
That's right?
Yeah.
I'll be honest with you, in everything we've done in the podcast, that is my favourite thing.
Fair.
My least favourite thing was when Ray from 2 Unlimited liked the Instagram post of Master.
Really?
Yeah.
To be fair, I did tag him. But
well, there is that.
Well, it's the same. You tagged them.
I didn't tag him.
That's just called good manners, mate. When someone tags you with something, you have to like it.
I hashtagged them. I didn't tag them. Sure. So he was searching.
So that means he searches for his own name.
He was novelty searching.
Oh,
yeah.
Dear.
Well, the same whenever we did E17. Yeah. And we got a like off Terry, I think it was. And
Tex.
And he's the one that we were taking the piss out of.
Yeah.
He wants American things.
Tex.
Okay, so yeah, that's Sensor, Age of Panic. Breeders released a head-to-toe EP. Oh, it got to number 68, which is really good. But in terms of, you know, taking it really seriously.
Just vanilla.
No.
Shampoo.
Shampoo. Fucking hell, you're
about 5 years too early.
Yeah. You're right.
Absolutely. Shampoo. Trouble. This got to number 11.
Banger. I'm partly responsible for that.
I beg your pardon. Vanilla.
No. I'm partly responsible for this getting to number 11.
Oh, right.
I'm not partly responsible for vanilla.
You bought this, did you?
Vanilla ice cream or vanilla. I did buy this on single.
So did I. Because I had to play it in the indie clubs. Indie clubs.
Yeah, it was massive in the indie clubs, man.
It was.
Yeah, huge.
Weird huge. Shit.
The dance floor would be packed when this.
I know.
As soon as you'd hear, all you need to do is and it'd be like, flies
bam.
And shit.
Yep.
Insane.
Indeed. I mean, you know, talk about short.
It's still a
careers.
Tune, though, isn't it? It's still a tune. I'll happily say that. If I heard this in an indie club now,
would you be?
I'd actually be really shocked because I'd be the only person on the dance floor because I'd be the only person.
That's probably true. Yeah,
I'd be like, I'd be there collecting my daughter.
You'd be like, all right, guys.
Shit,
busted.
Yeah. Just listening to that fucking that song by the Rolling Stones on your Walkman.
Yeah. Oh no.
Yeah. Oh dear.
Right, what's next?
Number 22, Jesus and Mary Chain with Sometimes Always.
Oh great, that's off Stone and Dethrone. That's the one with Hope Sandoval from Mazzy Star.
Absolutely,
yeah.
yes. Great. Number 45, this one got to, and it's a bit more of a weird one. Well, you know, again, it's one of those ones that is quite distinctive of who it is, I think. But if you're not a fan of the band, then you might not know.
I can't remember this. Oh, I remember this.
This isn't me.
No. This is Stereolab with Ping Pong.
Do you know what? The weird thing is, I had Dubstar in my head. And like Dubstar and Stereolab are like...
Are they interchangeable for you?
Yeah, that's the same thing.
Well, no. Dubstar is shit and Stereolab are great.
I'm going to give you... There you go. Look at that one. Fine.
Hey.
I've actually queued this one up on YouTube because I can't believe it's a thing. And neither of you are going to remember this, I'm quite sure. But I'm going to fade this in. It's called Coney Island. It is a Van Morrison cover version. But tell me who this is and why it happened.
Coney Island.
It's called Coney Island.
Coming back from Downpatrick. Stopping off.
Is that Liam Neeson?
Liam Neeson. Absolutely. Man. Liam Neeson released a single
Bollocks.
In 1994.
What?
It got to, it only to got
to number
Schindler's
List.
It only got to number 88. I'll give it that. Apparently, no, I think it was to promote some weird film he was in. I don't think it had anything to do with the film, but he put it out to...
What film was he doing? So that would have been the film he did after Schindler's, I guess.
No clue.
Michael Collins?
I mean, that would make sense.
suppose.
Yeah.
It's around that time,
isn't
it?
That's hilarious, man.
Coney Island by Liam Neeson.
Fuck me.
Yeah, there you go. All right, so now you've heard that, you can cross that off your
bucket
list.
Never even knew that was a thing.
No, exactly. Why would you ever know that? Next. Oh, this one isn't on Spotify either. Smash, I Want to Kill Somebody.
New wave.
Absolutely. Mm. This is the one that I have put in because I thought Gaz will probably know this. This got to number 37. Oh, he's punching the air.
Is it Therapy?
It's not Therapy.
Sounds like therapy.
It's not Therapy.
How dare you?
Dave, have you any ideas on this one?
The album was 30 years old last week. Their debut album.
I saw they were talking about that.
Hang on, let me hear the vocal.
Hopefully they're announcing a tour in a couple of weeks. Can't wait. Okay. Produced by Jack Endino, Dave.
Is it Curve Dog?
It is Curve Dog.
Yay! Oh, only top 40 hits.
Dummy Crusher.
Only top
Dummy
40
crusher.
Hits.
Yeah, well done, people.
House of Pain did a remix of it.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah. What the fuck? Pardon? House of Pain.
That's peak fucking 90s, that is, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Yeah. That's bizarre. All right, fine. Well done, both of you. This one, it's off an EP. Got number 53.
Oh.
Yeah. All right. I was about to say, but I'll let Dave sweat a bit.
Nah. I don't think Dave's going to know this.
No, he wouldn't know this.
Actually, you might recognise.
I know that riff.
Do you? You might recognise when the vocals come in. You would not have liked it at the time, I'm almost certain.
A guest on True Cold Pop went to see them last night, in fact.
Really?
Yeah, as I saw on Twitter this morning. Yeah.
Fucking blue tones or some shit.
No, it was earlier than that.
Please, guys.
Dodgy.
Oh, fuck this.
Their first album. Yeah. No, that was the second album.
It's off Homegrown.
Yeah. Second album. The one that's got Staying Out for the Summer on it. Grassman. It's not your
Grassman. Grassman's good.
Really not your bag, Dave. Sorry, mate.
Really is not.
This is prime fucking hashtag fucking year zero Britpop now.
Yeah. So, that's Dodgy. And then there's a couple more that aren't on Spotify. Fatima Mansions released The Loyalizer. And I know that there is a documentary film just come out on the iPlayer about Micro Disney and Cathal Coughlan, who was in Phantom Mansions. Apparently very good. I have not seen it yet. Sebado released Skull, got to number 84.
Great song.
But then the last one I've got listed here, and this is a great tune. This is an absolute classic, I think. This got to number 79 only, but, you know, this was a big...
Venus
in Furs.
Yeah.
It does, absolutely.
Shiny piece of leather.
Oh, fuck me.
Oh, you see, you've turned into Dave. You've got the Dave disease here. It's stressing.
Not as easy as it looks, motherfucker.
Shut up and let me listen.
This is a brilliant tune. Brilliant tune.
Yeah.
Dave, are you getting anything from this at all? Doesn't ring any bells.
I don't know what this
one
is.
Fine.
Hang on.
Oh, it's fucking Deus.
Deus!
Yes!
What a band!
Deus, mate, there you go.
Oh. Well done, sir.
There you go.
I desperately want an original copy of their second album, the one that's got Little Arithmetic and Roses on it, on vinyl.
Right.
But it's serious dollar. What was it? This is Suds and Soda.
This is Suds and Soda.
Yeah, Suds and Soda.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. This is on Worst Case Scenario.
Debut album, yeah.
Yeah.
What a band.
This is a brilliant tune. This is so clever and interesting, but still really catchy.
Do you remember Roses?
I remember it coming on. I can't remember.
Video. Dark as fuck. It's so good. Somewhat Reading.
Right,
incredible.
Yeah.
What a band. They were...
Belgian.
I was born in Belgium.
Were you?
My boys.
No way! There you go.
My boys.
Yeah, no, I think these were mates with Solvax, I'm pretty sure. There.
I would have thought so. Small country, mate. Yeah. They're all friends.
Yeah, I mean, it is literally a small, very small.
It's literally
small.
Well, it's literally that big on a map.
Yeah. I mean, it's bigger than Northern Ireland. It must be.
Most places are.
Yeah.
Right, that's all the singles. I think you did very well on those, people, so well done.
Okay. I am a little bit disappointed.
Oh, yeah, what was the one you were going to thought I might put in?
Why don't you play it off your phone and see if either Chris or I can get it.
Play it into the microphone.
All right. This is the one I thought you were going to play, because I bought this on 12-inch single the same day I bought Voodoo Lounge.
Right, okay. Right. Go on, then.
God, is that...
Get on Top of the Pops.
Is it Thunder?
Close.
Oh, The Almighty?
Nah, not as close.
Little Angels?
Oh, you're getting there. You're getting there. Just give me the next one.
Oh, Skin?
Yes.
Is it?
Oh, fuck off.
Terror Strength.
Oh, wow. Oh, I remember that coming out.
Make you love me. Wow. Get your Gumby shit
Skin.
Out.
Shut
up,
Dave. Oh, mate.
Shut Skin. Up.
Fucking hell.
I think it was maybe about a month after I started co-hosting True Cult Pop last year on the Patreon, someone suggested Skin's debut, and I was so fucking happy.
Oh my God, really?
I was so fucking happy. Basically, it was just me talking for an hour and Steve going,
Oh, that's hilarious.
Just getting really excited about it.
Right, should we get back into this motherfucker?
Yeah,
let's do it.
So the next one is called Suck on the Jugular.
I mean, what?
Okay. Although that, look, man, there's Charlie Watts with the funky snare work.
That's filth, isn't it? That is filth.
I mean, yeah, they're just going for the funk feel on this.
Yeah, fucking drummer, isn't it?
Right. Like, yeah, this is like fucking Parliament meets the Chili's, isn't it, really?
Yeah, with less California.
Come on. Parliament meets the Chili's. I mean, we're talking about fucking some of the most basic white boy funk I've ever heard in my life.
Right.
Stones could do the funk.
I'm talking about what they're aiming for.
This isn't it. Oh, man. Again, there's a quote from Keith Richards. Says, oh, Mr. Watts again. I mean, it's all drums. The arrangement is all to do with the drums. Yeah. Charlie laid down the beat and I said, well, if you can keep that up for several minutes, we got a track. If you can keep this up for several minutes, this is fucking limp funk. This is, again, I haven't played drums since I was about 17. But dear God.
Well, I think this one's fun, at least. It's got a decent groove to it. It's very much a jam track. After a few whiskeys, I'd have a little dance to this.
Right.
Yeah. You shake that booty.
You never seen me dance, have you?
Oh.
There's time.
Exactly. The night is young.
It's
not even night.
No, yeah. True.
It's still fucking daytime.
Me dancing is not an uncommon thing.
Nope.
Can't wait.
Although it's quite uncommon to view.
Right.
It's true. Yeah, no, I can't be getting on with this at all. This sounds to me like a band making a funk record who've never heard any funk.
I don't mind this. I think you've been hard on it.
I don't know, but I'm a huge funk fan. I love that shit.
You are a huge funk fan.
And then, All Get Together and Feel All Right, All Get Together and Rock All Night, which switches up to
Get Together and Fuck All Night.
All Get Together and Fuck
All Night.
Yeah.
In the arse.
I mean,
in the arse. Man.
Would you want... If someone said to you, we're going to have... There's an orgy with the Rolling Stones on offer. Would you care to join in? Would you?
No. Now or 30 years ago?
In 1994.
1994? An orgy with the Stones.
1994.
Yeah, you're 18.
I'm 18.
They're 51.
Yeah, I'm going to an orgy. Yeah, if I'm going to an orgy with the Rolling Stones, and I'm like, there are going to be attractive women there.
Yep.
I'm gonna go. I'm gonna leave almost immediately, terrified.
Yeah, indeed you are.
Right, next one.
Okay, yeah, Suck on the Jugular. I'm not a fan of that at all.
Okay, I thought it was alright. I thought it was fun at least. Don't get me wrong, I'm not sticking it on my playlist.
Is that what you call it?
Yeah.
Alright. Track number 12 then is Blinded by Rainbows.
And just a little, you know, this is Mick Jagger tackling the Troubles.
I know.
Dandis.
I like a proper anti-war sentiment going on here. Because, he's already said that slavery's bad, so now he wants us to know that war is bad as well. Yeah.
The troubles are bad. War is bad.
He's going the full Phil Collins.
Yeah.
DeBano.
Yeah. So it's, it's a well-meaning, plodding missive, I guess.
It is. I mean, because it's about the Troubles and, this sort of thing, there are some really quite incongruous lyrics in this. Like, you've put this into a song, have you, Mick? You know, the lyric, did you ever feel the blast as the Semtex bomb goes off? Do you ever hear the screams as all the limbs are torn off? Like, that's
a landmine.
Strong for a fucking album track on your 1994 album.
Yeah. So look, right, I prefer it to Zombie.
I prefer Syphilis to Zombie.
I mean, yeah, I do hate Zombie.
Yeah. I like the Cranberries as well, but I don't
like this at all.
I've put the good, it's not as bad as it could be.
Okay. Oh, right, yeah.
The bad, it's quite dull.
It's not good. Yeah,
yeah, that's kind of my review of it.
Sure.
Where are you on this? Did it make you think about things you'd never thought about before?
No.
I mean, when he asked, did you ever kiss the child who just saw his father shot? I don't know if that's the reaction.
Yeah, yeah. It's not your day, is it?
Oh, my God. That is the... I've just had recall for the darkest fucking joke in history,
absolutely,
isn't it?
Absolutely.
The kid's standing on the edge of the cliff and his parents are... Yeah. Fuck me. Oh, my God.
Oh, boy.
I'm not, you know, we're all in our 40s. I'm not shocked these days by anything, but every now and again, that joke will just appear in my head and I'm just like, fucking hell.
I think this drags on for much longer than it's 4.5 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't understand why he's... Of course, he's seen something on TV and he's gone, I'm going to
write
a song.
We've all watched the Clue News, mate.
He was in Ireland recording.
Oh, yeah, he was. With Ronnie Wood Studios.
And he was just like, these guys are people after all.
I can fix this.
This is real. I can sort this out by the power of dance.
Hang on, how much money did Phil get for his song?
And wait, they're all called Mick.
Yeah.
I like them. They're my people. Yeah.
It's like they're all on some kind of Mick Jag.
Right, no, I would 100% take that off the album.
Yeah.
I don't think it's one of the worst songs on the album.
No, and it's down there, though.
Yeah, but that's unfortunately not the compliment it could be.
No, it's true. Okay, right, we're kind of nearing the end, though. We're going to go on to track 13 of 15.
So. Baby, Break It Down, which seems like a big task for a baby.
It really does.
Yeah, yeah, motor skills.
I mean, that reminds me of Start Me Up.
It's a nice riff, though, isn't it? It's a lovely riff at the start.
But it did make me think that maybe, because, like, Baby, Break It Down, maybe Mick is, like, banging one of the roadies. And he's going, right, okay, we're done now. Break that down for me. And I'll meet you back in my hotel room, please.
Yeah.
I have next to nothing to say about this song, much as the song itself has next to nothing to say.
No. I think this is... I think this is average as shit. I really do. It doesn't do much for me. The lyric, there is no river running that we can't cross. Does one or the other of us have to be the boss? Which again makes me think he's banging a roadie.
Call me sir, goddammit. Yeah. Yeah.
Or they're indulging in some Bruce Springsteen roleplay. Yeah.
You be Bruce, I'll be Courtney Cox in the Dancing in the Dark video. Go!
Yeah. There's an article on Vulture where someone has gone to the effort of ranking all 374 Rolling Stones songs.
Fuck me.
And this one is the lowest from this album.
Right.
Nah, I'm not having that.
It's got the comment, a mid-tempo Blandwich.
Blandwich.
Blandwich. That's a good...
I've got a feeling that Gaz has got something to say about this.
Gaz, give me some space.
Give it to me. We've got 1, 2, 3, 4... So the last kind of like, five songs have been kind of... Four songs, you've been blandola, proper saggy as fuck middle section. Yeah. I really like this song.
Okay.
It's got a nice little riff. Again, it kind of could have fitted on kind of Some Girls or like one of the albums from that kind of time. It's got that wicked kind of languid groove again from, you know, your boy Charlie.
Sure.
I love the chorus. It hits that kind of Stones kind of sweet spot. You know, Baby, We've Got a Long Way to Go. I really like that lyric. Mm-hmm. I love it when the organ comes in on the second half. It's got a nice little lap steel guitar solo.
There is more lap steel. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, I really, really, really like this song.
Oh, okay.
Oh, fair facts, right.
You know, especially after the last four.
Oh, mate.
I genuinely forgot, you know, when I kind of foolishly said to you guys like months ago, I'll come and do fucking Voodoo Lounge. And then like, you know, about a month or so ago when I thought, I'm really to fucking like listen to this album again and, you know, reacquaint myself with it. Got to that middle section, I'm just like, oh God, how the fuck am I going to defend this, man? I think this is great. I really like this.
I don't think this is bad. I think it's all right. It does have something a bit more to it for me, but I can't get excited about it at all.
Fair.
Right, that's track 13. Okay, let's do track 14. This one's called Through and Through.
Right. And this is the longest song on the album.
Mm-hmm.
Just over 6 minutes long. And it's another Keith Richards composition and vocal. He's written in an interview, or said in it rather, in an interview, "I was pissed out of my brain when I wrote that. This is the weirdest thing, the circumstances. We were in Barbados early last year writing songs, Mick and I. Charlie was there, and also Pierre de Beauport, my guitar man. He's at the guitar at the end. And we'd been out to a club in Bridgetown, a tropical night, with the night off. We got back to Eddie Grant's studio at 5 a.m, get out of the car. I start staggering in, and suddenly I turn around to Pierre and I go, 'Switch the stuff on, man. Incoming, incoming.' I just went into the studio and laid it down in one take." So this is off the top of the dome for Keith.
Straight off the top of the dome.
Off the top
of the
dome.
As he rocked the microphone, freestyler. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Look, to me,
yeah,
this has got something. I don't know what it is. There's a deep, understated cool to this song. Where they've got this first section that's really kind of just like kind of open and just light, mm-hmm. and then obviously we come in, we've got this big fucking reverby drum kit that comes in afterwards. There's just a coolness. There's a slightly atonal delivery that he's got.
You mean he can't sing very well?
Well, quite possibly that, but
mm-hmm.
there's just something about the way this track fucking sits together that I really like. This is possibly my favourite on the album.
Wow, okay. Yeah. Right, Gaz?
Hello.
What do you reckon?
Yeah.
Yeah,
best song on the album.
Wow, right.
Best song on the album.
Fuck me.
This one of mates.
Ah. Yeah.
Absolutely fucking superb. The best Richards sung track of their whole back catalogue.
Jesus.
And
wow.
I always loved this song, right? Even at the time, I was just like, this is fucking great, right?
Yeah.
If only it was, there were two things, right? If only this should have been the final track on the album.
Well, it
right?
was on the vinyl.
Yeah, there we Absolutely. Go. Shout out to vinyl.
Yeah.
They knew where it's at. And always loved this song. Kind of forgotten about it kind of over the years. So, like, throughout the kind of sort of mix of like, that drum bit.
Yeah.
It was so yeah. good. So
Love
good.
It. Love
right,
it.
Right, right yeah.
Kind of forgotten about this song like throughout the kind of sort of mid to late 90s into the early noughties.
Mm-hmm.
And then, did either of you two guys watch The Sopranos?
Yes.
Yeah, I did, but I don't remember this song from. I read it.
Oh, really?
I read it when I was doing my research. And
oh, wow.
Yeah, and I just didn't.
When this was used in the final montage of season 2,
yeah.
right? And when this came out, I was like, fuck, man, that's that song of Voodoo Lounge.
Oh, no, yeah, if you knew it already.
Back. Yeah,
yeah, sure.
Like, wow,
yeah.
But, you know, the way it's used, you know, the kind of, the final scene of season 2 is like a montage that kind of gives the viewer like an update of like the character's emotional state, like Tony's daughter kind of graduating high school and, you know, the
going out with Bill Wyman.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Right. Yeah, of course. Cool. No, not high school.
Breaking up with
junior school.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
breaking up with Bill Wyman.
Because she's too old.
Absolutely, yeah.
Obviously, right, you know. Like Tony himself kind of resplendent with cigar in his kind of gaudy living room. There's like no dialogue and just this song playing over it. That kind of like final montage and the song kicks in. And it's just utter perfection. And just like the song, you know, it shows that, you know, even in this era of their career, you know, like I was saying before, you know, the Stones could knock out songs like this for shits and giggles.
Mm-hmm.
And like I've said a few times, really, when the Stones get it right, few can fucking touch them.
Right.
And that why this, it, I think it's fucking criminal that this song is buried at like the penultimate track
of, yeah.
on the album, right?
Yeah.
And I love the fact that whoever decided to use, yeah, that bit when it kicks in. Oh,
I mean, we're
so
nearly four
good.
Minutes into the song here. Yeah, it's just kicking in.
And whoever it was, you know, who decided to use this for that scene in Sopranos,
yeah.
fucking genius. I mean, whoever it was that decided on any of the musical keys in Sopranos, the fucking genius.
I mean, such
you know,
a,
the guys
from
Journey have got a lot
job.
To thank that
oh my
fucking
God.
Show for.
yeah.
Wow.
Their entire last 20-year career.
Exactly, right. But, you know, it's just.
And Glee.
Yeah.
True
oh,
enough,
of course,
enough,
you know.
Yeah.
But this song is just. It's just effortless drama and just like, you know, those tom drum hits and it's fucking wonderful. This should have been the last track on the album.
Right.
It really should.
This was the closer on the double vinyl because of time restrictions. There is one more track which was only on the CD version.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, you're very welcome, I think, to think of this as the last track. I think it was probably meant to be.
I think of it as the last track.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. I think this has a bit more oomph to it than a lot of other stuff. It's a bit less generic as some of the other ones as well. I will never listen to this again. But
I will.
Right.
Good night.
I don't get that from it, but I do think, oh, right, at least it's a little bit different. And I take the piss out of Richard's singing voice here, whatever. I don't give a shit. It's fine. It suits the song. I don't. That's fine. But
this is immediately going on my board games playing list, which I know
that sounds awful.
That is the most middle class playlist I've ever had.
It's like,
what else you got on there?
I mean,
everything by Chess.
I've got.
What, the musical?
Oh, sorry, yeah, the musical. Yeah, no, exactly.
I'll run you through it after the record.
Right, okay. Yeah. I look forward to it.
Okay. This is another one, apparently, where Charlie Watts played the drums in a stairwell to get the sound that they were looking for. It's a bit more echoey.
Yeah.
Right, okay, that's through and through. So that's track 14. We've only got one left on the album. Like I say, it was only on the CD release, but it's Mean Disposition, track 15.
Who ends a fucking album like this?
Wow.
Yeah. What the fuck? It actually makes me angry.
It's like the band from Roadhouse.
Yeah. On that vulture list of the 374 songs, this is ranked second lowest off this album. With the quote, Voodoo Lounge is an hour-long album that would have killed at 45 minutes. If you make it all the way to the end, you'll hear this, a rockabilly-derived song that huffs and puffs and closes the album on a meh note.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Exactly. My thoughts entirely.
Do you want to have a guess at what the number one Rolling Stones?
The highest ranking song off this album.
No, sorry, the highest one of all. Of all time. Yeah.
Painted Black.
Nope, it was the top
can't,
three.
You can't always get what you want.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Can't always get what you want was ranked number one.
I've always found that song really fucking overrated.
I mean, it's lovely, but yeah, it's not my favourite at all.
No, it's nowhere near. Wouldn't even get my top 100 Rolling Stones songs.
Well, on the same list, though, Through and Through, which is the one we just had, was ranked the highest from this album.
This album, I thought it would be. I bet
145.
I bet that was, whatever. When was that article written? That was post Sopranos, right? It must have been. That's why. I bet if that article was kind of done, if the Sopranos wasn't a thing and that article was written,
probably.
I guarantee it would have been Out of Tears or Can't Be Rocking.
Yeah, it gave it
like
a
that. I guarantee.
Yeah. But I think this is a rubbish way to end the album. This is
a B-side.
It's an absolute B-side.
Yeah, rubbish.
Yeah.
Rubbish.
And it's fucking, you don't need 15 tracks. You don't need to make it a 78-minute album. Take some of the ones off that you do not need. Tighten this shit up.
But like I said, it was that era.
Absolutely.
Everyone was putting everything out. Absolutely. Everything was going on the fucking album.
No
quality control.
When you read about, they do say that they'd written 20 other songs that they were considering. Mm. So it's not like they were struggling to put songs on. These are the 15 that we had and we loved. They had fucking 30 or 40.
Yeah.
Take some more off.
They shouldn't have bothered. We put this out to Twitter. We have actually sod all.
Got fuck all.
Yeah, there's nothing. Is there anything at all?
Let's have a look.
The Stones were number one the same year as Oasis and Prodigy. Who knew? That's from the Zeros podcast.
Yeah.
We got I'm Saying Nothing from Gaz Jones.
Hello.
Yeah. We got Rich the Rambling Elf, who said, I wasn't there at the time, but an important thing to look at alongside it is the tour that went with it. It demolished the prior record for highest grossing tour ever and remained the highest grossing until the Stones toppled their own record in 2006.
Yeah, with the Bigger Bang tour, wasn't it? Yeah.
Exactly. They won Billboard, Grammy and MTV VMA awards around this time. It was the start of them being venerated as legends. The live album they recorded on the Voodoo tour is their best-selling live album. It was just a massive era.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that the industry did so much. The industry had a lot riding on them being successful.
Big time.
Be All Right in the 90s podcast said this was one of Special J's choices for our most underrated album of the 90s in our recent episode.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
I mean, I can't go along with that, but I think that's plain from what I've said.
I mean,
it's
the best 90s Stones album, but then, to be fair, there's only two to choose from.
I was going to say, there's only a
couple, wasn't there? This is Bridges to Babylon is fucking terrible.
Bridges to Babylon, that's the awful
I've never listened to that.
No.
Awful.
And yeah. It wasn't number one.
K.D. Lang sued them and now has a co-writing credit on the lead single.
Oh, right.
Anybody See My Baby? Because it rips off the melody line to Constant Craving.
Which is a good song.
It's a great song.
Right.
Anybody See My Baby? It's terrible.
I see. Oh dear. Well, yeah.
Right. Awesome. Okay. Well, look, that's, I mean, we've got to pick a track
a quick sum up. Right, Dave, here's my question to you. You had not heard this album before.
Yeah.
What were your thoughts going into it?
I thought it was going to be, I thought it was probably going to be a bit of a plodder and a bit of a kind of Faded Glory record.
Yeah.
Two tracks in.
Yeah.
I thought, I'm going to have a really good time with this. And unfortunately, the rest of it, with the exception of Through and Through, and that's a big exception, which I think is the best track on there, a lot of it is what I feared it would be.
Okay.
But I do stand by the fact that I really like the energy on both those first two songs, and I think Through and Through is a fucking great track. So
okay.
I got 3 out of 15 out of it, and I got some other bits that I didn't Fine. Mind, but in terms of stuff that I was like, I like this, I like the energy, the sank about this, I like 3 out of 15.
Fine. My question to you guys is, first of all, I guess, when was the last time that you would have listened to this album in full?
It's been a while.
Yeah. Okay, so you're not
been
like...
a while. It's been a while.
Not like your heavy rotation. Going back to it, how did it stand up to your memory of it?
It was more like a warm, nostalgic hug.
Okay, that's nice.
Because mm-hmm. of the time that I bought it and the memories that surrounds what I was up to
so
in 1994.
Was it, like, listening to it, you were immediately going... I remember this.
Yeah.
One you go, I remember this.
Yeah, yeah. There wasn't a single track on here. Well, apart from the final track.
Yeah, well,
where I'm just like, that was the only one where I was like, I do not remember this. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, but then I was immediately like, oh, of course I don't remember it because it's absolute dog shit.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was, there's a great 10 track album in this, I think. I think I could do a decent 10-track album in this.
It would be a much, much better
album. Oh, because
I think,
completely.
I do not think this is a good album. No, this is not up my street at all. Mm-hmm. I think this would be, you know, let's say I'm giving this 3 out of 10. Mm-hmm. I think a 10-track album would be 5 out of 10. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But I don't like this album.
Fair.
I got that.
Yeah, I think
it's not a classic, but I think it's the last good Rolling Stones album.
Right, fair enough.
You know,
fair enough.
To be fair, there is only what 1, 2, 3 albums after this, but
oh really?
Is that
all?
Yeah, of original material. Yeah,
is that right?
Yeah, there was Bridge to Babylon, A Bigger Bang, uh-huh. and Hackney
and
Diamonds
then,
last year.
Last year.
What I heard of Hackney Diamonds, I quite enjoyed.
Hackney Diamonds is really fucking good.
I see.
It's really good. Surprisingly, I was like, we reviewed it on the pod last year. I was like,
is that because Charlie Watts was dead?
Oh my
Lord.
Oh, Crystal.
Oh, dear.
We're going to upset people.
You've upset me.
Yeah, poor Gaz. Look at his little face. Look at his little face. That man's a father.
Oh.
Right. Okay, so, yeah, we're not all in agreement. We've got different levels of enjoyment. It's a definite gold, silver, bronze kind of affair.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was fun to have a chat, and I'm really glad that we got
really
to have a chat with you,
this.
Gaz.
I really enjoyed the recording of this.
It's been an absolute fucking honour and a privilege and a pleasure to be a co-host on
a treat for us, man.
Pop Collaborate and Listen, the best podcast in the land.
Well, woo! Come on.
Stick it on the poster.
Big up the True Cult Pop Boys. Give their podcast a listen if you haven't so far.
Please
I'm going to stick all of the links to True Cult Pop and to you and your only fans and shit. I'll put it all in the description.
Yeah, boy.
I'll put it all in the description, so check it out.
Only grands.
Only mans. Only mans. Right. Everyone, thank you so much for...
Whoa. We've got to put a song in the playlist.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, fuck. What would you put in?
I would put in that piano ballady one. What was it called?
Out of Tears.
Out of Tears.
Right, okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I
don't like that one. That's
nope.
Bizarrely.
Here's the thing. I don't really give a shit on this album.
Okay.
There's nothing that I feel strongly about.
Okay. I'll go 3 and 3.
Fine. No problem with me. I get that it is something, but, and I was like, yeah, this is okay. This is better than some of the others. So 3 and 3, we'll stick it on our playlist, our ongoing playlist. We have to put a song, or between 1 and 3, onto a playlist.
And genuinely, if you have never listened to this playlist... we talk about it every week.
It's a good playlist.
If you never listen to it, it's a fucking good playlist.
Right. Can you put it on Apple Music, please? Because I ain't got and that's Spotify.
I do not know.
I don't know. We need an account. No. Maybe we can. I don't know.
From a selfish point of view, I'd just like to listen to it myself.
No,
I ain't got a Spotify account.
Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to love and leave you. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for your feedback on the previous episode. As always, you guys have been amazing. Feel free to drop us some money via our PayPal link because we're running out of it. We had to buy some beers for tonight.
It's true as well.
It is very fucking true.
We've got to pay for some flyers
and the
electricity for our fringe
to keep those beers cold.
Absolutely.
As well, I believe,
and if you are listening to this in the time it's coming out, then we are doing our first live shows in Brighton Fringe. It's a quiz format. We've got some great guests coming on. It's a bit of fun.
It's
a Wednesday night in Brighton, so it's going to be more difficult to get to if you're not from the Brighton area.
Yeah,
thanks,
Dave.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
The idea is we're doing a pair of
wankers.
We're doing a pilot. And
can't you do it on a Saturday in Peterborough, please?
If we're doing it as a pilot,
hey,
and if it's successful,
venue,
we may do some something else exactly. with it later. Good. But it needs to be successful first, and it might not be. Anyway, guys, successful. Thank you for joining us. I'll see you later. Bye.
Bye.
Love you. Bye.
Thank you for checking out this episode of Pop Collaborate and Listen. It was produced and edited by us, for which we can only apologise. We're on Twitter at PCL Podcast, on Instagram also at PCL Podcast, and facebook.com/PCL Podcast. All of these, plus links to our various Spotify playlists, etc., are on our website, which is PCLpodcast.com. Please feel free to get in contact via any of the social media or on PCLmusicpodcast@gmail.com.